Blog Talk Radio.
At this time, I'd like to welcome to the show former CCW World Junior Heavyweight Champion, Iron Man Champion, Tag Team Champion, World Heavyweight Champion, the man that has earned the name the Ultraviolent All-Star, Justice Payne. What's going on, man?
What's up? That's quite an introduction, but I guess everything's true, huh? What's up, fellas? How are you doing?
Doing all right, man. It's good to finally get you on. You know, we wanted to bring you on, go over a few things in your career. It's been quite a career, and you know, I just don't think you got enough doing your time. And you know, maybe people just don't know and just need to learn a little bit. Maybe they could archive that shit.
Yeah, well, at times it was hard to really grasp or for people to know who I really am. And you know, they based everything off the character that I played. Unfortunately, I was usually the heel, which sometimes carried over into the locker room and stuff like that. So, actually, when I get to meet people and people really, you know, hung with me outside of wrestling, they were like, wow, you know, they get a completely different impression. And I'm like, yeah, I just, you know, played a character. And I was very dedicated to, you know, keeping a character up. And, you know, whenever I was in the wrestling atmosphere, I felt like I had to do a, you know, bring a certain atmosphere to it. And I just, you know, it brought people the wrong way at times, but it was just me, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. Well, you know, I think you did a great job at it. I know you were, you know, one of the original four. Take us through, you know, what it was being one of those original four and coming up when the, you know, the whole thing started, the ball got rolling, and, you know, what was your part in it?
Wow, what a, what a story. It all started, I guess, actually, believe it or not, my brother was the first to, out of us, to actually go and train to be a wrestler. Now, you know, a lot of fans from the beginning of CCW know that we, you know, we did the backyard stuff, and a lot of people called us backyarders and had no business being in the business. And actually, my brother had had run into a kid that he went to high school with, and his father. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Ace Robinson. He did some small promoting with NWA New Jersey, that, and I'm going back, like, you know, 98, and basically he you know, he was on my brother. He said, oh, you're a big kid, you know, you should get into wrestling, and he knew we all loved wrestling and stuff like that. So finally, I actually talked to my brother, you know, I thought, go down, see what's up, you know. So he took him to the Combat Zone Wrestling School, which, you know, was just a wrestling school. There was no company. There was no wrestling. It was, I believe it was just John Dahmer was training students. And, you know, John Zandig observed at times, but he was busy. He had, you know, side business going on. And, you know, he was in and out there, but, you know, he did help. But John Dahmer was, I think there was like three or four actual students that were working with John Dahmer at the time when we first, you know, when we first got started. Actually, my brother got started. They actually said, I actually wanted to train, and they actually told me that they thought, in their opinion, I was too small. So I actually, my brother trained for about a week, maybe 2 weeks. And, you know, I showed up because I, you know, I would support him. And like I said, I was a huge fan of wrestling anyway. So, and actually at the time, I think my brother just had his driver's license. So I think I was driving him there, and I showed him that I was actually acrobatic. And at the time, I only weighed probably maybe 155 pounds. And I said that, look, I can do all this. You know, I was doing backflips off the top rope and you know, moonsaults, landing on my feet, springboard moonsaults. And because I was always acrobatic, and that was just from, I guess, messing around on trampoline and, you know, diving boards and whatnot. But, you know, they were like, wow, that's, you know, that's pretty impressive and stuff. So that's actually, and they said, you know what, maybe there is room for something like that here. And I said, well, yeah, you know, because he's kind of the bigger guy. I said, we could work together. And, you know, basically he could do the power moves and I would do the fast stuff. And, you know, we'd work well together because we, you know, we knew each other inside and out, of course. And basically we really didn't have to hold back on each other. You know, we knew it wasn't going to be personal. And, you know, that actually worked in our favor as well. So I started training, and, you know, we went from there. And then we actually had a friend also who, I don't know if you remember, TCK. He was a childhood friend, which, you know, still a great friend of mine to this day. And he started training as well. And he hung around. He got with it a little bit. But he was just more into the hardcore stuff. He really didn't – he wasn't too big on learning, you know, the different elements of wrestling, you know, with timing and stuff like that. And so he didn't really he was good for the most part with the hardcore and stuff like that, but he really wasn't interested in learning like psychology and stuff like that. So, well, anyway, so then we got rolling there. It was us three. Then TCK knew Rick Blade, who actually started training. I think he worked about a month before the actual we started our first show. So I think he only trained for an actual like a month before we started doing shows. But he got it fast. I mean, he picked up stuff really quick, and you know, with the karate and the martial arts and the background that he has, actually, you know, it fit what we needed at the time. And of course, well, you know, I didn't mention anything about Lobo. It's hard. It's a lot of information to go back to. But he was actually one of the original students that I was talking about with John Dahmer. So Lobo was actually the first out of all of us. You know, he was training while, you know, before we even started there. So, but yeah, that's as far as with me though. Going back to me, it's just my brother started training. I jumped on a few weeks into it, and you know, we went from there. So.
All right. Got to fast forward a little bit after that.
Sure.
One of the first and craziest fucking moments ever in CCW had to have been a day, a show called Pyramid of Hell.
Yeah, that was
how the fuck did that go down? Like, who came up with that crazy shit?
That actually, to be honest with you, and people are shocked when I tell them it was my idea. We had that roof hatch, and a couple months before that, we were always trying to figure out how we could incorporate doing something there. And I came up, well, my brother was going to do, he wanted to do something with fire and tables and stuff like that. And he does his front flip off the top rope, you know, and, you know, onto a crowd of people. And I said, basically, you know, we could set up for that, and I'll come flying through there. And everybody laughed, and I was joking, you know, and I laughed with them. I said, no, I'm serious, I'll do it. I said, it would be crazy, because I said, you'll have the fire, you light everything up, everybody looking at you. I said, I'll, instead of just jumping through, I said, I'll dump down like a bag, you know, I can't even remember, 10,000 thumbtacks, I had a big sack up there with me. And basically, I just dumped that down just to grab everybody's attention, because nobody was, you know, nobody would have been looking to see this little kid jumping out of the, you know, it happened that fast, they would have missed it. So I had to think of something to actually grab their attention away from my brother, who was on the top rope ready to fly into the burning mess there that Lobo was. And so basically, I threw the thumbtacks down to grab the attention. Everybody looked up, and here I came. So, and believe it or not, I hit, but I kind of slid off the side to where I really didn't even hit the floor that hard. So, you know, I think everybody, you know, Lobo didn't get burned up too bad or anything like that. So I think everybody actually made it through that pretty safe, which,
Any injuries off that shit?
No, because I had, actually, the way I fell, I kind of hit, and there were so many tables that it actually, believe it or not, the tables break your fall a lot. I hit the table, and as I hit the table, I just, like, avalanched down, so I was just catching the corner of the tables, and it actually broke my fall to where when I hit the concrete, it just didn't, you know, I really didn't hit that hard. I mean, obviously, there was, you know, some bruises and stuff, but at that time, I mean, that stuff was expected anyway, so cuts and bruises and all that stuff that we experienced, you know, back then was no big deal. But, yeah, no, everything, you know, with that moment, I mean, it was just such a crazy, crazy idea, and I was expecting far more worse, but at the time, it was, we were just trying to grab everybody's attention, like in the wrestling world, and just everything. It was at that time, it was trying to top ECW and what they were doing and stuff like that. It was let's get more crazy than what they're doing and stuff like that. So that was just one more idea, to get us out there, and it worked because people were talking. And I over the years I've been asked that many a times about that particular moment and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it was, and believe it or not, it was my idea to jump into that mess. So, hey, that was one good thing about John Zandig. You know, he had ideas, but he never forced a big idea on you or never expected you to do anything that he wouldn't do. And a lot of the big ideas and the big, the big things that you've seen, people come up with themselves. And, of course, John's like, oh, you feel okay about it? And like, yeah, okay, do it. So, it actually, as sick as it is, it actually brought a smile to his face when I said the idea. So, but I said, nah, I'm cool with it.
Sure,
so,
it did.
it went off well. I mean, the camera caught everything it was supposed to. Everybody was in place, and it got the reaction that we wanted. And at the end of the day, everybody was safe and went home. So
that's good. Yeah, it was a crazy spot. I do wish that there was, the video production there was today. I think
it could have been a little bit better, but yeah, right. It could have been
a
little bit
time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean,
going to, the first Cage of Death. And, CCW never stopped progressing with its violence and its ultra violence, and you were in the first Cage of Death. I mean, how did that go down? All right. So, as I was saying, the progression of violence, and, when it came down to, Cage of Death, going into that, how was that?
That was very exciting at the time for me. We basically talked about, we named our shows every month and stuff like that, but we wanted to have like a actual big show to via, Starrcade and NWA and WrestleMania with WWE and stuff like that. So we wanted to actually have a big show because we had big plans for CZW. So that was what we came up with. We just figured, we'll do a crazy cage match and just, add all kinds of ultra elements into it. So, at the time, my brother and I, we weren't feuding, but basically it was me and Lobo was actually more of a personal feud at that time. So it just fit that. It was kind of the biggest feud at the time. It just fit well that it would be, him and I in the cage. So that's how that came to be.
Right. What was the whole thing like, going to, the Hate Club, the whole Hate Club idea, and, with Whitebeater, the first Hate Club?
That actually was Max's idea, the whole Hate Club thing. Whitebeater and I were kind of close, just basically what happened was he started in CZW, and I just tried to help him out with a lot of things at the time because he was just a big, his presence was just, very intimidating and stuff like that. And he had, believe it or not, behind the scenes, he actually has like a really funny personality. But he had trouble, bringing it out when the camera was on. And I said, dude, just be yourself. I said, just, how you bust balls and just, you're funny with everybody and stuff like that. I said, just let it go, man, and just be, And, me and Max, just brainstorming of different ideas. We came across, how them two should be related and how their characters would be. And he said, Max came up with the idea. He said, well, what about, us actually becoming like a group? Because it would just be so like off the wall with the character that you are and, what you represent and stuff like that. And the way Matt, the Whitebeater, is, I think it would actually work. And I agreed. I said, well, let's throw it out there and see what happens. and you know it stuck well, so and it actually worked well. But that actually came, that idea just came, you know, with me working with Wife Beater, you know, with different moves and psychology in the ring and stuff like that of what you know, like I said, to bring out his character and stuff. So, you know, that's how that came to be. And it was fun. I mean, it was great, you know, working with him. And then I had Justin Case with me at that time. And we just thought of different ways just to, you know, bust balls with people and stuff like that. And it got over. The fans liked it. And, you know, the boys liked it because they would come up with different ideas and, you know, what we should do and stuff like that. And it was a fun time doing that. So, and then, you know, John Zandig liked the whole Hate Club idea. So we just kept like carrying over, you know, with different people in different forms of the Hate Club. I mean, if you think about it, you think of a Hate Club, you think more of like, you know, Gage and Hatred, you know, with the name rather than me and the, you know, and Wife Beater.
Well, yeah, we'll go into that.
But it worked. I mean, it worked. So
yeah, that was the base of it.
Right. Right.
Next thing I want to ask you about. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Next thing I want to ask you about was, you know, the progression that you made from, because obviously, you know, there was a certain point that you just, I mean, you got in the gym and went hard. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you was doing some serious shit, and you made that progression from a junior heavyweight to a heavyweight.
Right.
You know, what was that whole progression like, and now how did you make that happen?
That actually came to be with me, really. I really didn't take myself serious as far as the size that I was to be a professional wrestler. And at the time, that's all I was doing. And, you know, I would tell people, I said, you know, I'm training to be a pro wrestler and we're doing wrestling shows and stuff. And people, you know, say, you're a wrestler. You got to be a big, you know, so-and-so. I said, nah, that's the days of old. I said, you know, smaller guys and stuff like that. And I actually knew in order for our company to succeed, we needed, like, a strong, not so much a, you know, a big guy, but just somebody, you know, that was well-rounded that actually could hold the title, the heavyweight championship, and could actually support the company. And not just a guy that just went out there that swung, you know, swung light tubes or you know, could do hardcore matches. It was actually somebody that could do the hardcore matches and somebody that could, you know, take on any opponent as far as, you know, the next night in the ring and just do a straight-up wrestling match. And I just – John Zandig actually always pushed, you know, for us all to work out and stuff like that. And at first, when I first started training, I was my body was so beat up, I really didn't even want to think about hitting the gym because my back was just, I had a problem with my tailbone. I really messed up my tailbone pretty bad when I first started training, and it actually hurt me. Probably the first, you know, once we started doing shows, probably the first 8 months of shows, I mean, I wore padding, you know, under my pants and stuff like that. My tailbone was really bruised. So
and immediately started jumping through
the
roof holes.
Yeah, so anything that I did, it was just really, you know, I was really in excruciating pain, anything I did, like, outside of wrestling. So I really didn't, you know, think of too much with the lifting. But then, you know, I started healing up, and he pushed the working out and stuff like that. And actually, my brother was more into working out than I was. So he was going to the gym a lot. Like I said before, with the training, I started going with him. And I kind of fell in love with actual weight training and stuff like that. And, like, I seen, you know, a slight progression on my body, but not what I really wanted. I wanted, you know, faster results and stuff like that. So, you know, I just started hitting it more and more and getting more advice from people, you know, what to take and stuff like that and how to get bigger. And I basically focused and wanted, I woke up one day with the idea and I said, I want to be the leader of this company. I want to be the world heavyweight champion. I want new guys to come into our company to say, well, that's our guy, that's our champion, that's our leader, that's our, you know, that's our mouthpiece, that's the guy that represents us. So I actually got very determined on that idea, and I told John, I went to John Zandig's house, and I sat down with him, and I said, look, I'm determined to be you know, I want to be the voice of our company, and I want to be a role model. I will, you know, I'm coming to the shows. You know, I'm not going to just have sweatpants on or all ripped up. I'm actually going to, you know, going to represent as well, and I want to be the champion, and I'm going to show you that why I should be the champion. And it went from there. I was just determined to be the best I could be as far as, you know, really, really carrying myself as a professional to a certain extent in that atmosphere, you know what I mean? So, I mean, we were still in the combat zone. Like, it wasn't, you know, the WWE or anything like that. But, it, you know, I just wanted to carry myself as a professional and, you know, as, you know, a real world champion and stuff like that. So I just really focused and dedicated. And from that point on, I just fell in love with working out. I mean, to this day, I mean, I just love it. It's a huge part of my life. And it actually helped me out a lot with, you know, injuries and stuff like that and coming back from things a lot faster than before I worked out and stuff like that. So, but I just really focused and I really didn't care what it took. I just wanted a goal for myself. So, and it happened fast. So I was very, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, my first experience, you know, in seeing you because, you know, I got to be a diehard CZW fan. February 2001, crushing the competition, and I at a local show, you know, I'd see Johnny Cashmere and Trent working, you know, crazy ladder match with Blade and Nicky Benz, and I talked to him after the show, and he said, "Man, if you like this shit, come out to Sewell, New Jersey." And I'm like, "Where the fuck? What are you even talking about?"
Exactly.
And he's like, "No, we got some shit going on down there, CZW." He's like, and I said, "Oh, you know, who works there?" He's like, "Our champion, Justice Payne, man. He's good. He's gonna be working Tajiri." So that my first experience of seeing you was working Tajiri, who of course I knew from ECW.
Right.
You know. You know, what was that whole thing like?
I'll be the first to admit, at that point in my career, I had no business being in the ring with Tajiri. But, it, I mean, he ran circles around me, and I'll be the first one to admit it. I mean, I had no idea of you know, I didn't know this was going to be until we got to the building. I had no calls, nobody told me anything, and I got to the show. And I remember that was Delaware, right? When I worked. The first time that I worked the jury was actually in
crushing the competition.
Delaware. Okay. Yeah. That was. I believe that was the actual. I think that was the second. Is that the night that Mikey Whipwreck came out? Or no?
Not sure. I know. I mean, you may have worked in previous in Delaware. You definitely may have.
I worked. The first time, I believe I worked him three times. The first time I worked him was in Delaware, and that's what I'm referring to, the night that I wasn't told anything.
Right.
I showed up to the show, and John Zanzig says, "What do you think of Tajiri?" I said, "Oh, he's great." And he said, "Oh, you're working him tonight. He says, "I got him in Super Crazy here. Blade's working Super Crazy, and you're working Tajiri." I said, "Okay, great." I said, "Does he speak English at all?" Which very little. So, you know, that happened. That's how that happened. And then you know, I guess the jury actually liked the boys and liked the the locker room and stuff like that. So he hung around for a couple more shows, and I worked him again at a small little bar in Delaware one night. He was there. Tommy Dreamer was there, and that was a real fast. Like that was we were flipping the belt that night, and then. I worked him in Sewell. Did I work him in Sewell?
Yep.
Was that at the soccer arena?
Champs.
I worked him in Sewell, and by that time I actually got a feeling for what it was like being in the ring with him. So actually that match I was a little more comfortable with. And working with him was fun and it was awesome. He kicks hard, but it was great. And, it was a learning experience for me. It was just, in my eyes, it just helped me get better, you know, and just progress my talents and stuff. So, but no, it was a fun time and fun experience and I liked it. And you know, everything he asked me, you know, he said, are you okay with it? I said, yeah. I said, you know, I said, spit that shit in my eyes. I really, I don't care, you know what I mean?
Hey.
Cool. So, it was fun, and he's a cool guy, and, you know, everything went off well, and, you know, I had no complaints.
Yeah, I'm going to jump around a little bit.
None
of this is going to be perfectly in order, but, you know, I got a bunch of shit to ask, but,
Yeah, I mean, there's so much, you know, you could go to, so.
There really is. But, Jerry Lynn, how was it like working with Jerry Lynn?
I loved working with Jerry. I knew Jerry before, I met Jerry at, an indie show in Baltimore before I worked in that night in CZW, and we hit it off real well. I didn't work him on that show, but, we actually went. It was a small show in New York that we did, and we hung out after the show. You know, a bunch of us went out to eat and get some drinks and stuff like that, and we were all staying in the same hotel. So I hung out with Jerry, you know, that night and stuff. So, you know, we hit it off real well. So when he came to the Combat Zone, that was another one of those, didn't know anything until I got to the show. As soon as I walked in the back, I seen Jerry Lynn hanging out. And I said, I went right up to him. And he goes, I said, hey, Jerry, oh, hey, what's up, brother? And, you know, we're bullshitting. He goes, we should have fun tonight. And I was like, oh, am I working here? And he goes, oh, yeah, you don't know? I said, well, I just got here. And I said, my promoter's horrible with calling me. I guess he likes to, you know, surprise the boys just as much as the fans, which is a true statement. He loves doing that. But, yeah, and I found out, you know, I was working Jerry from Jerry, and that night was, again, I mean, it was awesome. It was fun. You know, I believe we had a good match. I would have loved to have worked him, you know, maybe two more times to actually, I think maybe our third match, we would have really, you know, worked well together. But it was, you know, it was a really good match, and, you know, he's an awesome worker. I mean, it was a great experience on my part, again, just being in a ring with him and, you know, like him, Tajiri, just veterans, you know, and guys think I've been around for at that time because of, you know, hearing about CZW and stuff like that. At that time, I'm only 2 years into the business, you know, which I was only working maybe once, maybe twice a month. So, I mean, I only had, you know, a handful of matches under my belt. So working them guys and stuff like that, it's just we were getting so much notoriety around the world, just being so crazy and stuff like that. People actually thought, you know, maybe I was a little more bigger than I was, but I really wasn't. I mean, I only worked, like I said, I hadn't worked much, you know, to that point. So, you know, it was just an exciting / nervous time for me. And, you know, like I said, it was just an awesome experience. So.
Yeah. Well, I was with you on that. You know, I'm one of those guys that, you know, contradictory to a lot of people's opinions. I'm a CZW fan above everything. And, you know, I have been since 2001, and for a guy like you who was the flagship of the company, you know, definitely, you know, holds a good point, you know, it holds a good part of my wrestling interest. So when I see a guy like you and to get those guys, get those opponents that I feel you deserve, I'm just as proud as you are wrestling that match. And, I thought that was great.
A lot of guys, you know, a lot of fans and stuff that I talk to, after that, you know, they had said to me, you know, wow, I was real proud to see you in the ring with him. And, you know, guys that were veterans, and, you know, they said it feels like, you know, that you actually, you know, you made it, or, you know, you're taking a bigger step in your career and stuff like that. And I, like you said, I mean, I've had a lot of fans come up to me and say, you know, I was proud to see you, brought a smile to my face, you in the ring with him and stuff like that. And, you know, that's cool, and that's what the CZW was about. Just, you know, pleasing the fans and just making it feel like it was, you know, a big family and stuff. So, yeah, that was awesome.
Right. Another name, which back then it was only but an indie name, but right now it's a name. How was, you know, your feelings on the CM Punk match?
Here we go. you know.
Here we go.
Here we go. My most asked question. Everybody wants to know about me and CM Punk. Now, you know, I know that he hated the match. I know, believe me, I'm very familiar with all his comments and derogatory statements he had about me. But
yeah.
That was a weird night. A very, very weird night. Now, granted, a lot of people who have ripped me, and I've never claimed to be the greatest technical worker in the world, and I've never claimed anything. But at that time, CM Punk, he wasn't as big an indie star, prior to WWE than he turned into with Ring of Honor and everything like that. And he actually that was his first, maybe second match back when he cracked his skull. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. He actually cracked his skull then, and he was out for almost a year. So that was actually, I think he worked the week before, and then he worked me. And I got to the building. I was aware I was working in that night. I got to the building, and, didn't approach me or anything. He was actually in the corner. You know, he was texting. And just being real, like, quiet and kept to himself, which is fine. I mean, because at times, I've been accused of that and stuff like that. That's no problem. But, guys were going up to him, shaking his hand, introducing themselves, which is, I don't know, I always felt awkward. I felt like if I'm always, whenever I worked in somebody's company, I usually, introduced myself or walked up and, did the greetings and stuff. Hey, thanks for having me, So he just had everybody come up to him, and he was sitting in his corner just doing his thing. So I came up and introduced myself and, real nonchalant, hey, how you doing, Kind of didn't really blow me off, but, just kind of, real short with me and stuff. I said, okay. So I walked away. And, the show started, and we haven't said a word to each other since we did it. I came up to him and said hello. So I'm like, man, where's this guy's head at? And so I'm asking people. I said, do you know him? Or, are you familiar? Are you friends with him or anything? So a few people said, well, yeah, he likes to do his thing and this and that and all, but, he's an all right guy. So I got ready for the show, and we're actually halfway through the show, and I went up to John Zandig. I said, hey, listen, I kind of motioned over to him, maybe we should go over some stuff and get ready for our match and stuff like that. And he said, hey, can you give me a few minutes to get dressed and I'll come find you? So I said, okay. So, John Zandig said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. I'm getting nervous because it's the main event. I said, because I really didn't see too much of his work or anything at the time. Like I said, he just worked for Ian a lot and stuff. I may have seen one or two of his matches, but I really didn't see too much of him. So I just want to know what his big spots were. We could put something together. So finally, two matches before Bane, which was ours, he finally came up to me and he said, hey, listen, I think this is your company. I'm going to be the heel. And I'm like, that's not going to work. And he goes, well, I don't know, I'm coming in here, you're champion. I said, listen, you don't understand. I said, these people hate me. I said, I can't do nothing right. I said, it doesn't matter. I said, no matter what I do here, I said, I rub people the wrong way. I said, I could do the biggest baby face thing in the world, and I said, they'll still find a reason to hate me. I said, I can't be a face here. It just doesn't work. So he says, well, I'll make it work. So you're not going to make it work. I said, there's a lot of smart marks out there. I said, they're familiar with your work. I said, you're a popular guy. I said, just go along with the face thing. Let me do my heel thing. I said, maybe there'll be some people that are popping for me just because they're diehard TZW. I can turn them real fast. I said, let's just go with that. So that rubbed him the wrong way because I shot his idea down. But as you know, I wasn't very well liked, so... People pop for my accomplishment at times, but it just was hard for me to be a face, and so he didn't like the idea that I shot his idea down. So he said, okay, well, he said, what do you have in mind? And I said, well, we do this, we'll do that, and stuff like that. And he goes, I don't know if that's going to work for me. And I said, well, it's not going to work for you. I said, what did you have in mind? And he says, well, let's just go out and feel the crowd out, and we'll see what happens. I said, okay. I said, well, I can tell you right now how the crowd's going to be. I said, they're going to pop for you. They're going to hate me. I said, even the ones that, like I said before, even the ones that'll cheer me, I'll make them hate me. I said, you hit off all your big spots on me. I said, I'll powder out. I said, I run like a coward at times, and, you know, I do the low blows and all that, and it's pretty simple. So right before the match was ending, before ours, I said, hey, what do you want to do for a finish? And he goes, just hit me with something big. And I said, well, can I show you what something big is? And he goes, Just give me a signal. And I said, dude, come here. I said, I got to show you something. And John Zandig overheard us as he was walking by, because he was going to, you know, tell us good luck or whatever. So he got into a thing with CM Punk right there, saying, if you don't want to be here, you can leave. He was going to say, I'll put Messiah in, which Messiah kept coming up to me, asking me if everything was okay. And I go, dude, I think I'm going to work you tonight. I said, I don't think we're going to have a match. He just doesn't seem like he wants to work. Which I don't know what his problem was or anything, because I don't really think I had a problem with anybody. Like a lot of guys said, you know, he had a problem. This is after, you know, a lot of guys said he had a problem with what happened with Hiro and my brother, but that was before after our match, so that really didn't play a part in it. So
right.
I don't know. And then the match went off. It wasn't as bad as the match as he described. You know, I mean, believe me, I wasn't a big fan of the match either. So, you know,
all right.
I just don't think it was the world's worst match. And he described it as, I'm the world's worst worker, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I can't put a match together. And believe me, I tried to put a match together. You know what I mean? So,
and, yeah, I believe that.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I just, like 5 months before that, I worked Jay Briscoe, and that was a 40-minute, you know, solid wrestle. I mean, we did some hardcore stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The psychology was unreal. You know, and then the following month, you know, me and Kashmir worked the Briscoes in a half hour, just straight up match. And, I mean, I, you know, guy claimed that I couldn't work or anything like that. It was just, hey, I tried to put
that's
it up together. He just didn't want to go along with the program. So I just,
yeah,
and
I feel like
bad mouth me and stuff like that. And it's just, I just kept my mouth shut. You know, I never really, I said, okay, well, that's his opinion, that's fine. You know, I just didn't. So, and then John Zandig went up to him, because John Zandig, he overheard the whole night, and he knew what was going on. So John Zandig basically told him, he said, you ruined that match. He goes, he basically told CM Punk he wasn't welcome back there. And,
right,
you know, me and John Zandig are fine, but, I mean, I wouldn't go over the mountain to defend him, but that's like the truth. I mean, he seemed like he didn't want to be there. And John Zandig told him, he said, you know, you ruined the match. The guy was, you know, anxious to work with you. He wanted to put a good match together, and you just didn't want no parts of it, which is the truth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not, really, you know, I don't want to badmouth anybody, but, you know, he put the mouth on me first. And I mean, hey, if, like I said, if we put some stuff together and, you know, he listened to some ideas, it would have been a completely different match, and then actually he might have had fun with it.
Right.
So, and I actually put him over at the end of the match. At the end of the match, I actually put him over. I said, because, you know, I said, if they ever bring challenges in here, somebody like that is exactly who I would want to face. So, I mean, I tried my best, but I'm not a dick all the time. So.
I had to ask you, you know, I have a lot of other shit to ask. I don't want to bring this whole interview down, so I'm going to ask you right now, and I'm going to get it out of the way.
Thanks.
And I got it, because this is a guy that you've worked, you know, through the years, and, you know, you've been around quite a bit. You know, what's your feelings, you know, on the passing of Trent Acid?
It's sad, man. It's really sad. We, you know, regardless of what internet reports have said in the past, and at one point them leaving CZW because I came back and stuff like that, Trent, Johnny, and I, and my brother and everything, like, you know, a circle of guys, we've always been tight. So we've always been close. There's some, you know, from, like, I guess, 2001, 2002, them guys, me and my brother were living together at the time, and them guys would come back after every show and crash at the house, and, you know, we'd party back at the house afterwards, and them guys came to, like, family functions and stuff like that. Like, if I, you know, my aunt and uncle had a barbecue, like, you know, them guys would come over and be invited and stuff like that. and we were always tight and we were always close. That's mainly the reason why I popped in and out of PWU, is because of, you know, just we've always had a tight relationship, and you know, like, we always had each other's numbers, and you know, when I was at a wrestling and stuff like that, Johnny would still contact me and Trent would still contact me. And it was funny because, you know, years ago I was with my ex-girlfriend, and Trent was seeing one of her friends, so we were always at Rowan College, or not Rowan, I'm sorry, Drexel College together, going to parties and crashing, you know, at their place and stuff like that. And just, you know, we were in Japan many a times together, and just, it was just really sad, man. It really upset me when I got that news. So, I mean, I can't say that it was unexpected, because you liked living life on the edge, but it was
it just really
hurt, you know what I mean? It really hurt, and
sure.
It was sad, man, because he didn't see the potential that everybody else seen in him, you know what I mean? He was always
his
worst enemy. It was a shame because, I mean, he had the look, he had the ability, he had the talent, and just, he could never just put it all together and just, you know, keep himself, you know, straight and stuff like that. So just, like I said, it was just really sad. And that's how everybody feels, man. It's just, he was just a great guy, you know, a great human being. But at the end of the day, like I said, he was just his worst enemy. And it's just, you know, somebody I'll really miss.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing.
And like,
but,
on his tribute show and stuff like that, it was just, you know, Johnny contacted me, and I, you know, I said, you know, whatever you need, man, I'll be there, you know that. So, and that's like I said before about the PWU thing, it was just basically, you know, not as much as I really didn't, because at times, you know, I go in and out of spurs with wrestling. I do want to do it, I don't want to do it, I, you know, go through that stuff. And with them two guys, it was always, you know, whenever Johnny called, it was just to see them two guys again, just to hang out with them and just feel like, you know, old times and stuff is why I would do it. So.
Right.
And every time I was around Trent, it felt, you know, I felt like a kid again. It felt, you know, just a ball busting and laughing and the stories and stuff like that. It was just a really, you know, he's just a great guy, man.
Yeah, definitely. Honestly, you know, obviously, I should say, you know, this show has been named, you know, in tribute after Trent, because I was a huge fan of him and, you know, a friend of him, a friend of him. And I know all the workers were much closer to him, so I always ask about that. But, yeah, he's definitely going to be missed, man. So,
yeah,
you know, just wanted to give a, you know, quick ask about that. But, you know, back on a high note, you know, ask about, you know, when you went into Jersey All-Pro, you went in there, and at the time, you were on the highest rise of CCW. You were the flagship. You went in there, and you pretty much had to start over. I mean, how did that feel to, like, go in there and work from, the, you know, the bottom up, knowing that you were on the top of another company?
I never really fit well in Jersey All-Pro. I don't know. It was just, I don't know if they had a different fan base or whatever. I knew, you know, Fat Frank was always high on me because, you know, we had several conversations, you know, on the phone and stuff like that. And, you know, Frank's a real good guy. And the atmosphere just wasn't, you know, me as far as, you know, it was great. The locker room and everything and the energy there was great. It just didn't mesh well, me being there. And Frank really didn't know how to present me as, he didn't want to present me as being, you know,
a tough guy.
He basically wanted to separate the whole CCW thing and me, but it's just who I was known, you know what I mean? I was just known to be that. And I think at times, guys didn't want to, I don't know, they just didn't want to, they wanted to, I don't know how to explain it, but they didn't want me coming in there as the CCW champion and just beating people and stuff like that. And he felt bad. He didn't want to put me down against his guys because I was CCW champion. So it was kind of, I mean, I never said, hey, I said, whatever you want, Frank. You know, I never came in saying that or anything like that. It was just, it was a real weird time and real weird every time I went there. I mean, I had a great time. I worked Nick Burke. Actually, way back when they first ran the arena, they tried to run the arena, and Frank called me actually on that day, and said he was stuck because the two guys had, because I told him, I said, hey, Frank, listen, you know, I said, because he always thought, everybody thought that I just was strictly CZW at that time. And I said, well, listen, Frank, you ever get stuck or, you know, you want to book me? I said, give me a holler, you know, we'll talk. So he called me and said he was stuck. And I said, well, he said, you work Nick Burke. Are you familiar with Nick Burke? I said, yeah. He said, I'll put you over to your building. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I said, that's fine. So I went and worked Nick Burke. And just every time I was there, like I said, it just didn't mesh well with New Jersey All-Pro and myself. It's just the fans. You know, the fans really didn't know how to take me. So, I mean, I worked my butt off, and I had a couple good matches with Insane Dragon, I believe I worked. Once or twice. I worked him once, and that was just you know, big guy and high flyer, kind of back and forth, and that was a really good match, I thought, like psychology wise and stuff like that. There was a few bombs.
The first time
Chaos really bombed. That was a bad match, but yeah, it was just you know, I don't know if you agree. I know a lot of Jersey All-Pro fans really didn't. You know, they really didn't see anything in me, and they really weren't anxious to have me back. And like I said, it felt weird. It just felt weird being there. And if I was just, like I said, it was this whole CZW thing. If I was just a regular indie guy who was getting booked on shows, but I just, unfortunately, I had that stigma of, you know, I'm the CZW, you know, champion. I'm the big, you know, king around here and stuff like that. So it was kind of hard for me just to go in and, you know, just be a regular indie worker. Which most
right, I agree.
You know, and most times, you know, I liked this whole CZW thing, and I wanted to stay there, but it was nice to have a few Xbox at the time and stuff and doing other shows, but sometimes it really didn't work, the aggravation.
Yeah, the way I saw it was, you know, I went there, and it was just as awkward because I was like, oh, shit, you know, CZW champion, the flagship of CZW is going to come over here, and you were like match four. And it's like, just say right now, like John Cena ends up on TNA on the mid card.
Right.
You'd be like,
exactly. Yeah.
That's weird.
He didn't want to put any of his guys, his top guys, he didn't want to put them down as far, you know what I mean? CZW champion beating them, and he didn't want to, he felt bad.
Right.
Down. So he really didn't know what to do with me either. So he would just, hey, you know, go work so-and-so right before intermission, which I loved. And I would leave the building. I was so used to doing all the main events, and by the time I would, you know, get my stuff together and do, you know, my post-interviews and you know, I'd have to sign a few things and do whatever. I mean, I was always one of the last ones out of the building every time we ran shows. So that was actually a truly different feeling going on third and being handed an envelope and, you know, saying, all right, and being out of a show, you know, leaving a show if I wanted to before intermission, which I really liked, you know. Wasn't that bad. But, it was weird.
Well, you know, now, Jay, you know, kind of want to throw something in there. I mean, you know, with Payne talking about the whole thing with Jersey All-Pro and CZW and, you know, not wanting to use him, you know, put him over at, you know, CZW champion, now it's a little different with the CZW and Jersey All-Pro, they're kind of working together. You know, they actually had a, you know, it's a lot different. I think it, you know, if this kind of stuff would happen.
The thing I got to disagree with is the last time that they actually worked with Mended Talent and stuff like that, they had Dan Moff come over, who was, like, I think one of their top guys, and they were still not main event, you know, so.
But it's not lower on the card, it's more mid-card, you know what I'm saying? It's more mid-card.
I actually think when I did it though, I believe that it was I believe there was a lot of territorial stuff going on at the time in wrestling. Like indie wrestling right now is too territorial. Like everybody's just trying to make a buck and trying, you know, because indie wrestling is just trying to survive. I mean, it's a shame, but it is. You know what I mean? And at that time, you know, it was Jersey All Pros guys, you know, Ring of Honor's guys. You know, CZW's guys. This is, you know, it was real, like territorial and stuff like that.
I think,
you know, a lot's changed now. It's not so much, you know, about that now, which it shouldn't have been. I mean, the guy, you know, we were making next to nothing anyway. So it's anywhere you can get the work and make the extra money and get the experience of working different guys and being in different locker rooms. You know, I mean, you know, I actually. that was one thing that I, you know, that I would, if I could take back stuff, is, you know, going back would be, you know, working more places and not having that stigma as, you know, the cocky CZW champion where I'm on
just the CZW guy.
Don't book me on your show unless you're going to pay me this amount of money and main event me, you know, because that's what actually a lot of guys thought of me and thought that that's what I was about, and I'm really not. I mean, I just wanted to work, you know.
So. All right. Next thing I'd like to ask you is, you know, the whole formation of the newer Hate Club, and, you know, not the Nick Gage and Hatred Hate Club that had become synonymous, but, you know, you and your brother forming the Hate Club and taking out everybody in their path, and, you know, how did that go down for you?
That was, that happened at Cage of Death, the night of Cage of Death. Nate Hatred was suffering from a lot of injuries, so that was going to be his last show, and Matt Wifebeater, he was dealing with some injuries at the time, and when we did the whole swerve, he actually got hurt a little worse during that match, but he was going to take some time off, and I, at the time, Mike Burns was booking, and you know, I was throwing some ideas. You know, in the past, I was kind of like the head booker and stuff like that, you know, before I left, and, you know, a lot of the ideas were my ideas, and I handled most of that stuff, but I'd still throw ideas at him, and just, I mean, you know, some ideas he liked, others he'd just shoot down. So I said, hey, what about putting me and my brother together? I said, you know, we did it back in the day. I said, and it's just, now that it's out that we're brothers, you know, and stuff, I said, it just, you know, I said, it makes sense. I said, and it would just be a big swerve on how we could actually, because the match, we actually, that was two Cage of Death matches. I think the one right before we worked was the one with the Black, or Sabian worked with Chris Cash, and, you know, they did the whole big spot. I can't remember all the guys that were in the match, but that was the night that Chris Cash and Sabian went off the top, and with the cash flow, and you know he let go, and it almost ended bad. So we were after them, and we were trying to come up. I said basically we're just going to go in there and hit each other with weapons, and I mean we can't top the way they're flying around and stuff like that. I said we got to come up with some kind of idea or a big swerve or something. So I came up with that idea. I said we can go into, you know, working like that. I said we could just form the Hate Club. Hate Club will still be around. Not saying we got to work tag matches every time, but, you know, I'll come to the ring with my brother will come to the ring with me if we need a swerve at the end of the match. There's, you know, a reason why I run out, you know, a reason why he would run out. You know, we could do tag matches, whatever we needed to go into the new year having an idea, you know what I mean? So that's how that came to be. You know, he liked the idea, and, you know, so we did the whole big swerve. Them two guys, they took some time off, and me and Gage ran with the Hate Club thing the following year, and we actually just, we stuck with the tag thing, so we really didn't work on any singles matches. We just, you know, we did the whole tag thing throughout the year until it was actually my idea. I wanted to branch off and start working singles again. So I just, I felt like I started getting too much into the hardcore where I really didn't want to. I just wanted to, I really didn't see the point of, there were so many other guys doing it, and I basically just for my mental sake, I just wanted to start working again. I started working harder and getting back, you know, in better shape. So that's how that came to be.
Who was your favorite match or favorite opponent through the years?
The guy I liked working with the most, I guess I would have to say the Messiah, Billy, for it just was real comfortable with me and him working in there, and it flowed real well. And we really didn't have to build a huge story because people got it, and they just knew. They just felt that, you know, they just, well, actually it worked because, he came from XPW and stuff, and he was their big XPW. Big Indian, he came in. And, you know, I was the leader of CZW, he was the leader of XPW, and that's why that worked. But just being in there, people just got a feel that, you know, for some, you know, the way we played with our promos and stuff like that, just people really thought that we hated each other and just worked well, and we worked well in the ring together. My brother, obviously, just because we, like I said earlier,
I have every favorite.
Well, inside and out. So, and just, I mean, there's been a whole host of guys, but if I could just, you know, through CZW, I mean, like I said before, you know, Jay Briscoe is really high up in, you know, my matches that I worked. I mean, that was just a fun match. And anytime I got to work with the Briscoes, I mean, they're just a class act as far as in the ring. It's just, it's so much fun.
Yeah. You know.
So.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, overall, yeah. it just had to be the Messiah and Nick.
Speaking of Messiah and coming from XPW and all that, how did the whole jump to XPW go?
Basically, all right, where did it start? They contacted, they contacted me about 4 times, and I said, no. And I've already known that they have contacted me. People have knew already, and I told people, you know, I said, yeah, so-and-so contacted me. At the time, I really didn't take them serious. And so they basically, they contacted me again. And at the time, I was asking John Zandig. I said, listen, I said, I'm putting all this time, you know, as far as I'm buying clothes for promos and showing up to the show in. I said, and I'm working out and buying supplements and doing this and that to maintain myself looking like a champion. I said, I'm doing this. I'm doing that to my body. I said, and I wasn't making shit. And I said, I just wanted a little bit more. Because we were running the arena. You know, we were putting more, you know, they were doing good. They had a good deal on the
business
and stuff like that. So I basically just asked for a little bit more. And his wife at the time, she freaked out because I asked for a raise, which I wasn't asking for. You know, when you think a raise, I mean, I'm not asking, I'm maybe asking for like $100 more, you know what I mean? And I just felt that with everything that I was doing, you know, being the main event, asked to be the main event every month and stuff, I just asked for a little bit more. And because of my personal life, you know, I was making changes in my personal life. So they came to me again and said, what will it take to get here? I said, well, I want $5,000 up front, and like laughing, and I said, you know, and guaranteed this amount of matches per, and I was just basically throwing something out there. So they called me back. They said, well, let me talk. I was talking to Kevin Kleinrock at the time. They said, let me talk to Rob and the guys at the office, and I'll get back to you. So I said, okay, great. They called me an hour later on conference, and they said, if we send you a certified check and a contract, you'll sign it and you'll appear on our, you know, we'll send somebody to do a promo at your house, and you'll appear on our TV. I said, if you send me a $5,000 contract, and you can, and I said, and you can guarantee me $500 to $600, at least $500 to $600 per show, guaranteeing me 3 shows a month. And even if we don't do 3 shows a month, you're still entitled to pay me 3 shows a month. Then I'll do your, then I'll do it. Which the $5,000 is what I needed to purchase my wife now, but girlfriend at the time. We were looking to buy a house, and I was trying to buy a house, and it basically, you know, it's just, I've always put my family first. It's really strange, but it's just that actually, I had my idea. If I do this, it's wrestling. It's nothing personal. I know other things happen to people in the locker room, you know, with the company and with Billy and everything. And I'm just, I'm making a business decision. So I went and did it, and, you know, sent me the check and sent me the contract, and we went from there. And it was basically going from making, you know, maybe $125 a month to making $1,500 to $1,700 a month, having $5,000 guaranteed, and just endless and endless merchandise, you know, thrown at me. So, and plus it was, I said, well, come out for L.A. for the weekend, and, you know, I'll put you up in a condo and just think about, you know, just think about what you want to do. So, at the time, like I said, I was only in wrestling for, you know, that was, you know, at that time, 2.5 years. So, you know, it was kind of like, you know, I talked to my wife, who, you know, we weren't married at the time yet, but, and she said, you know, whatever makes you happy. And I said, well, making us happy is what makes me happy. So
yeah.
I said, I'm going to catch a lot of shit. I'm going to catch a lot of shit, but here we go. So that's how that came to be.
Now, you know, what turned the page and made that thing go defunct?
Yeah, but I got one more that. Before that, I mean, when I don't know if you've ever seen the air on a TV show, it was already out because I called John Zandig and said, hey, I said, I got a check in front of me when I signed a contract. I said, and I got to do what I got to do. Just, I said, I asked you and I asked you. I said, I just got it for my personal life. I just got to do what I got to do. And, you know, it's just, and ideas were becoming stale at CZW and just plans and stuff like that. So I was bored, too, with the whole thing. And I just felt like, I mean, obviously it didn't go too far too long, but I just wanted to branch out in other ideas and other ways and stuff like that. So that's how it came to be. So he said, well, do what you got to do. I said, all right, well, I'm just letting you know before things happen and this is the direction I'm going. So
well, you gave him the option.
What's that?
I said, well, you gave him the option. You know, if he wanted you that bad,
I mean, I just didn't jump ship whenever you want to call it. I told him, I said, this is, look, I have it in front of me. I'm going to do it. I'm going to fax it back. I said, you know, I told you and told you. And he said, do what you got to do. So I did it. That was the choice that I made. And, you know, I bought a house and, you know, made some quick money and met a lot of people, you know, through the wrestling business that, you know, I actually became friends with. And believe it or not, I had a great experience while I was there. I mean, I was with M-Dog 20 and Josh Prohibition, who I knew from, you know, CEW. But just being out in L.A. with them guys, and I was with Chris Hamrick and Jerry Lynn and a lot of the other guys that were at CEW. And, you know, we had a ball there. It was a fun atmosphere, I ain't going to lie. And at the time, you know, I had a, you know, thing with Shane Douglas and stuff like that where I like Shane Douglas's idea of the whole, you know, stick it up your ass and I'm doing what I want to do and all. And I kind of modeled myself over, you know, being like that. So they actually, you know, when I got there, they wanted to run a whole program, you know, with me and Shane and stuff like that. And it was actually, you know, it was exciting. The idea was exciting and stuff like that coming from being a ECW fan and all that. So it was an exciting time, but it just didn't, you know. I mean, you know, history shows it didn't pan out so well.
Speaking of Shane Douglas, what was your inspirations coming up in the business? Because I see a lot of that Shane Douglas in you, but
Shane Douglas was a huge, you know, had a huge impact on the way I carried myself. You know, obviously, you know, I don't want to say I stole ideas from him, but you know, I guess that's what you could call it. I modeled myself of. You know, I don't give a shit. I'm the champion. This is my company. This is my, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do and that whole attitude. So, and I just liked how he, you know, what he stood for as far as being champion. So, you know, getting over the heel or just being very hated. And I kind of modeled myself over that idea. He wasn't the most, you know, liked guy in the business, you know, behind scenes and by the fans, but. You know, that's just kind of what I was going for. So, and at that time, being, you know, like 22 years old and having the idea of, you know, running a program with the guy that, you know, that I really, you know, idolized and grew up watching and stuff like that, it just, you know, was really exciting as well. But they closed doors before that could happen, so.
What's your feelings on Zandig selling the company to DJ High?
It's always, with John Zandig, financially, it's always been an issue with CZW. That's one of the reasons why I never really approached him as far as wanting the big paydays and stuff like that. Now, I made more money than all the other boys, but not by much. I mean, it was only a stretch of a few dollars, so I was told, you know. But at the same time, you got to remember, I was a local guy, you know, like the Nick Mondo,
no flying,
the Messiahs. I never was flown in. I was never transported anywhere. I was never, you know, this and that. I was told to, hey, you're going to be in the main event, show up here. And it was, you know, I was always local. I drove everywhere. So it was never a problem of, I can't do this show because of this booking, or I can't be here, or I missed the flight, or whatever. It was always a guarantee. Your main event, your top guy's going to be there, you know. I never,
of course,
was taken for granted. So, I don't know. It was just, it was always financial. We went month to month with surviving with shows, and you know, at times he owed a lot of money, and we used distribution deals and stuff would actually bail him out, you know, video wise in other countries and stuff like that. He would sign, and it was a shame because guys would never see any of the money from anything that he signed, because basically he just had to pay debts, you know, that were generated from the company. Just buying, you know, even with just buying extra shit for shows, I mean, even just buying a few, you know, tables to fly through adds up after a year, you know. If you're just charging tables to fly through, you know, charging them for a year straight on a credit card adds up to thousands, you know. And just, it always just was cutting close and money-wise and stuff. He never made any money off CZW, and like I said, even if he did get a bulk of something, he was just paying a debt off. So it was always a money issue. So I mean, I don't know personally how this deal went or the exact reason why. I've heard theories, or I've heard, you know, people, you know, talking, but I think it had to do with a money issue with John. So
right.
DJ had the money, you know. John said, well, you know, I'm sure he didn't make a ton of money off the company, and I think it's just he gave a number, and you know, DJ was actually able to meet it, and I think John just once and for all just, you know, had enough. So I think it has to do with financial reasons. Yeah, that's
right.
Just my opinion, you know. But
sure.
just being around how close I was to everything. Like I said, all, you know, the years that I was there, it was always tight as far as the money. So
now,
that's a lot of reasons why we had problems advancing and getting bigger than we were, because 1 month, you know, we try to set up storylines for 5 or 6 months, but then we wouldn't have the money to fly guys in and stuff and say, oh, well, I can't book him this. We don't have the money. So the ideas would get squashed and shit wouldn't make sense, and we have to throw all the guys together. So money issues hurt a lot of advancement in CZW as far as with ideas and going further in with programs and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Now, do you think DJ, you know, is the guy to take CZW into the future? Do you think, even though he had the money, do you think he has the mind to take CZW where it should go?
I'm not really close anymore as far as, you know, with CZW and any of the ideas that they have and all. But, I mean, the idea, I guess it's good with him branching out as far as wanting to go other places, and you getting the message as far as CZW out, right? You know, either Germany or still there, or coming back, you know,
right.
or CZW in Germany this past weekend or no? Were they?
Yeah, they just did that, actually, this past couple of days.
Yeah,
so are they still there, or they're coming back now, right? They're probably already back.
Yeah, I think today was their last day, and they're coming back.
Yeah, so, I mean, with doing stuff like that, you know, is cool, because, we, you know, when I was there, we did a lot of that as far as, you know, we went to England and Mexico, and, you know, I mean, Japan was huge with everything, but just as far as just the small, you know, trying to get the word out and stuff like that. I mean, he has the right idea as far as, you know, promoting CZW and stuff like that. It's just, CZW is always like a cult following, you know what I mean? And it was just, I
right.
just didn't forget that's, I mean, in as much talent. I mean, you can bring guys in. You can bring, you know, all this one. I heard this one's great from so-and-so and bring them in for one show. But, I mean, CZW's always been like a cult following and, you know, much like CZW was. It's just, you know, the homegrown talent is, you know, what the people come to see. And the people that they get familiar with is, you know, the ones that draw. So, I mean, you know, I guess he's going in the right direction as far as, you know, wanting to promote it and getting it bigger than it is. But I just hope, you know, he realizes, you know, how to keep it strong around here. So
I hope so, too. One rumor I heard.
Let me ask you, how do you feel about his visions and his, so far, him being the owner?
Man, I got mixed feelings. I got a lot of mixed feelings. I think, you know, there's some things he's doing good, some things he's not doing good. I just think that, you know, Sabian said this, we had him on, when this airs, it'll be last week, but we already recorded it. And he said it's a lot easier to get into CZW now than it used to be. And that's the fucking truth. You'll get a lot of guys in there that barely touch the ring. Now, back then, that shit wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, that to me is the truth as a fan, and I think that, you know, we're having to deal with a lot of working process, where back then, your process was done before you showed up, you know?
Right.
And you still had to work through a process once you got there, but it was a matter of that, you know, you had something to prove, and you proved a good amount of it before you got there, and you had half the hill to climb. That's just the way I've seen it, and it's a little different now. But he's done a lot of good things. I can say that. Zan did caught a lot of heat on his last year or two, you know, running the company.
Sure.
Because, you know, he got lax on it, and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, Zandig not showing up for the show, and, you know, he put the money in, he booked the talent, then he went home.
Right,
that's
exactly.
You know, it's probably not the best way to run a company, but
no,
I respect
no,
the
I
shit out of Zandig.
I heard, you know, stories of, you know, John toward the end and stuff like that, and I think his heart was out of it, you know what I mean? He just did it more for the boys, just putting stuff together. And,
right.
You know, just making sure to board, but I think his heart was out of it. I mean, I think he lost his passion for it, so, and I don't, you know, that's what I think happened. And like I said,
I hear that.
You know, going back to with the financial thing, I mean, just the whole, you know, everything with the financial and just, you know, just enough's enough after all the years of, you know, the rocket bumps and stuff like that, so. But hey, like, if DJ's willing to put his heart into it and try to make it a better product and give the guys a place where they can work and stuff like that, then, you know, that's more power to him. And,
yeah,
you know, hopefully, you know, he succeeds. So.
Yeah, I think he's doing a pretty good job. And my only worry is that he's putting out too much at once. You know, he's hitting Japan, he's hitting Germany, he's hitting this place and that place. And, hey, man, if your bankroll is great, I'm all for it. But otherwise, you're going to burn out, man. I don't know how to do all that.
Running wrestling shows and being a wrestler, you know, it's not something you get into to make money. I mean, guys have ideas and you know, plans for the long run, but you just plan on, if you're starting a wrestling company, if you're starting out to be a professional wrestler, you just be prepared to lose money. And,
right,
you know, as much money as you think, you know, you can do different shows or whatever, and I'll go here and make this and that and all, but then the traveling comes and eating and the trans and all that stuff, and it's just, it's a rough road, man. It's hard. I mean, obviously, when you get to a certain level, you know, then, you know, in WWE, I mean, a lot of the guys, they don't even make what you think they make, but, you know, once they get to a certain status, they do, but a lot of them guys, they're signing, you know, what you think is big contracts, but once you put all your road expenses on it and taxes and stuff like that, I mean, the guys, they're not making what they're making, you know, compared to what they're doing to their body, you know, every night in and out and on a traveling and stuff. It's just, but, I mean, don't get me wrong, once you make it,
when you've made it, then all the hard work pays off and you feel like you finally, you know, accomplished something, I guess, financial wise. But yeah, it's a wrestling business. It's not a place to make money. It really isn't. So
yeah,
you just got to really, really suck it up and just really love what you do.
Now, from what I heard, the rumors I heard all day, and I hope to God it's not true, is that your brother, and for those, you know, we said your brother fucking 25 times in this show, but your brother, Nick Cage, may move to Germany to train people in Germany. Oh, what do you know about that, or what part of that do you think is the truth?
I got a text message earlier saying, guess what your brother's up to, and I said, oh, my God, what now? So, man, and they, you know, because it's always something with him. So, you know, I usually...
So he's nowhere above wire.
Yeah, if something usually happens or something's going off, it's, you know, usually I get shot like 3 or 4 texts from the same people saying,
right.
You know, hey, guess what? And I'm like, usually it's like, oh, what now? Because, you know, of everything that's happened in the past, but they say, oh, you brothers seriously considering living in Germany and training at the dojo. And I said, yeah. Honestly, my words were, I'm not shocked, because my brother, that's the way he is. He just doesn't, he lives for the moment, you know what I mean? He's not
sure
me. I mean, that's why me and him are day and night. I mean, I always think of, via you see my decisions in wrestling, I always think of long run. I always think of, you know, the big picture. And, I mean, I guess I'm glad I think that way, because, you know, I've taken care of myself, you know, in life.
Who to think you're the older brother by looks?
right. So, but him, he's always lived for the moment. I mean, he just, you know, it's just another, he doesn't really have, like, a steady place where he lives. You know, he's lived, you know, different states and stuff like that. So he's, you know,
right.
in and out of apartments and stuff. So he doesn't really have, like, a steady home to where... And like I said, it's just the day that he lives life day to day. So he just sees it at another point in his life and another, you know, I guess, I mean, he loves wrestling, man. He just loves the business. And he loves being around guys.
Sure does.
That's what life's about. And, you know, we touch on, you know, the whole thing with the fire. I was going to get into that. But
so do you think he is flying the country?
You know what I mean? I haven't talked to him, but, I mean, if he was presented that opportunity, there's a strong possibility that he'll do it.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to him. I haven't heard anything, but saying if he's presented that idea, what I know he has going on here right now, nothing like, you know, no troubles or anything, no, like, you know, law troubles or anything going on. Nobody's pregnant or anything he's running from. I'm just like,
right.
If he gets like an idea in his head and just, wow, you know, that'd be something cool to do and something I could talk about, and, you know, basically fuck it. You know what I mean? Let's do it. That's, you know, you tell him an idea, he's just, let's roll with it. You know what I mean? He's real, you know, obviously,
yep.
you talk to him, he's real laid back and, you know, easy guy and stuff like that. And it's just, it's not hard to talk him into things, just truly, let me say. I mean, he usually just goes with the flow. So, if you hear about that he moved there, don't be surprised, because, like I said, I haven't talked to him yet. I haven't just the text that I got, and it was my words. I said I wouldn't be shocked if he told you. So, but I don't know. I don't know if it's, like I said, I don't, that's, he, you know, the person I talked to, he heard rumor too, so I don't know how true it is.
True.
So,
don't
be surprised.
What was, what was your experience when your brother almost died in Delaware in that light tube match?
I was away on vacation when it happened, and I got a text message saying that my neighbor had went to the show, and he texted me and said, hey, I know you're away, and I don't know if you can get to a computer or somehow get a hold of your brother, but he got messed up pretty bad. at the Tournament of Death. And I said, what do you mean messed up? And I, you know, I took it for, I mean, as much shit as he's been through, as much shit as all them guys have been through with all that, I just didn't, you know, I just was like, oh, well, yeah, you know, whatever, he'll survive, you know, he just, he won't even want to go get stitches, he'll just wrap it up. He's just the way he is, you know.
he tried.
The first thing I thought,
he tried.
I didn't think that, but you know what I mean, because when he says he got fucked up, just knowing the injuries he's had over the years and how he just brushes everything off. I mean, you see.
He cut a promo after that.
What's that?
He cut a promo after that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know he did. And I mean, it's just when he got burnt, before that, when he got burnt and stuff, and he was ready to wrestle, you know. When what was that when he got burnt? Do you remember when he got burnt? What was that?
Yeah.
When he got
Tournament of Death. I forgot the number of
Tournament of Death.
Was there,
Tournament
of
Death 4. It was, I was one of the Tournament of Deaths that I went to, and he was on fire for like 21 seconds or something like that.
And he was, you know, they roll, I mean, he was trying to roll, you know, they were putting him out. You know, they put him out too friggin' fast. And he was ready to work the following week. And I mean, he had third degree burns all over his body, and it was
just like,
that's just the way he is. Yeah, man, he's just.
He's the man, though.
But
he's the man.
Yeah, and he So basically, when I first heard that he was pretty fucked up, not compared to what other guys did, but, you know, I was.
Oh, the hats of the roof.
I reflect on some crazy shit that I did, and granted, I can't compare to some of the shit that guys did, but some of the shit that actually could have had me pretty messed up. I just, you know.
A scaffold and indicated a.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, you know what I mean, just simple shit, as many times as I've taken pile drivers through tables and stuff like that, and, you know, the slightest things can go wrong with that, and, you know, earlier in my career, 150 pounds, and having my brother do a fallaway slams off chairs that weren't even folded down into the ring, and jumping off this, jumping off that, and, you know what I mean, just simple, you know, the simplest shit that guys take for granted because of the bumps nowadays, man. It's just, I'm real thankful. But now, getting back to your question, man, I just really, I think it would just be really selfish on my part, because if I, like I said, if the slightest thing did happen, then I'm not just hurting myself. I mean, I'm hurting my whole family too.
Hurting your family.
And,
right.
You know,
I understand.
It's just, you know, I don't want to have, you know, teary-eyed people that I love the most staring at me. You know, I'm fucked up, but I can't take care of them. And, you know, just, it would really hurt me. Like I said, dude, I look at the long picture, and it's just, I'm not saying I wouldn't do anything around wrestling, because, like I said, when I was around all the boys, you know, at Trent's Memorial, it just felt good to be around the guys and you know,
I know.
Stuff like that. But
yeah.
As far as
you're in tremendous shape, so.
Yeah, but as far as being in the ring and stuff like that, I really don't see it happening. So I don't have, like I said, I don't have that itch anymore, and I did, and I went through, you know, a couple years ago, I went through that stuff where, fucking, I want to start up again, I want to do this, I want to do that, but, I'm kind of glad I really got that out of my system, so. But as far as doing stuff, you know, appearing at shows and doing, you know, small shit or whatever, and, you know, it ain't even about making money, and just, you know, if guys wanted me to, whatever, ref a match or show up and do something or just something to, you know, make a few people pop or whatever, then, you know, I'm down with that, so.
Sure. Now, you know, throughout your time, you definitely, you know, you've teamed with, you know, your various hate club members, you've teamed with Whitebeater, you've teamed with, you know, your brother, you've teamed with Johnny Cashmere, you know, wrestling Jun Kasai and Nick Mondo in one of the craziest matches ever. Now, I know this is kind of a ridiculous question, but what is your favorite tag team partner?
My favorite tag team partner. I guess I did the most with my brother, right? I guess that was the most tag team partner I had.
Right. That's why it's a ridiculous question.
Yeah.
Of course, you got to go back to the fam.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was, like, me and Cashmere did a lot, you know, a few tagging and stuff like that, and he like coming up with little ideas and, you know, like, you know, chemistry tags, but he didn't want to, at the time, he didn't really want to go-to overboard because of him and Trent, you know, with their, you know, with their, you know, the backseat boys at the time. He just didn't want to outshine that, me being, you know, us teaming or whatever. But I guess I would have to say my brother. So, although
I don't blame you.
The one night was pretty fun when I don't know if you guys remember when I tugged with Messiah and we wrestled Mickey and Nate at what was that show? It was leading up to Cage of Death 4. I can't remember the name of the show. It was the match that led
up to Cage of Death 4.
But I tugged with Messiah. I tugged with Messiah and we wrestled Mickey and Nate. That was pretty fun that night. But I guess we'd have to say I'd have to say Gage. So.
All right, cool. You know, before we do let you go, one thing I would like to get, and even though you're out of business, you're going to have to break it back into character right quick, and give us a Justice Payne promo for the show.
Wow, Justice Payne promo.
Yeah, I know, it's rough. It's fucking rough, I know. I mean, we're talking 2001 fucking Justice Payne representing Yakuza Kick fucking promo. Hit us off.
What topic should I cover?
Should I
cover being champion?
All you got to do is mention your name and our name and go whatever direction you want, man, and promote both because, you know, you're a legend in this motherfucking indie business, and that's it.
You just say Yakuza Kick Radio, right? That's just your whole title?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
All right, man. All right, here we go. What's up? If you guys haven't listened or you've just been hidden under a rock, this is obviously the Ultraviolet All-Star. And if you're familiar with Philadelphia wrestling, you have to be familiar with me. My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. Now, for those of you who think you know who the man is, believe me, you better realize who taught him how to be the man, and that is me, Justice Payne.
That's pretty good. A little lackluster, I know, you know.
That was off the cuff, man.
Yeah, you can do a take two, but if you do a take two, you got to come with energy, like someone just punched you in the fucking mouth or, you know, just hyped you up somehow. Because we did this with Sabian last week, and, man, if you want to do some shit, do it hyped, you know what I mean? Because I know you pumped some crazy pump. When Zandig was in Japan, and you were taking the company over back in 2001, and you know, you were cutting the fucking promos because Zandig wasn't there, and they had to put him up on the CCW Tron back in Stool, you know what I mean? You were cutting the promos.
You're trying to get me all hyped up, huh?
Hey, I do what I do. So,
let me see what I can give you.
Hey, man.
All right. Let's see here. All right, what's up, Yakuza Kick Radio? This is the Ultraviolet All-Star. And you know, when you think of CZW, you only think of one man. I don't care what they say, who's held the world title in the past, who's going to hold it in the future. You know it started right here with Justice Payne around my waist. Now you know success lives in my blood. And if you think there's going to be anybody in the future that can represent that ring and in South Philadelphia, you ain't got a clue. Because when you think of one man, of being the man, you don't think of Nick PH. You think of who taught him how to be the man, and that's me. The Ultraviolet All-Star, Justice Payne.
That's better, man. That's better.
Is that better?
A little more hype. That's great. I know. It's hard as a family man. You know, you kind of tone it down so you don't scare your kids and stuff. I know. You know? That's good shit, man. That's good shit.
Yeah.
You know, as closing, you know, a few closing questions. Eric, you got anything? I got a few more things. But Eric, anything you want to ask the elusive Justice Payne?
Well, I know he should be happy over the Philadelphia Eagles victory, and Not,
I almost didn't get an interview because I hate the fucking Philadelphia fans. Go ahead.
You caught me on biz. I seen that comment. I had.
I know, and I'm like,
I can't play with my opinions.
Fuck y'all. Go ahead.
I said, this guy, man, right now, no, I ain't doing nothing.
Fuck him, right?
Oh,
here you. It's all good.
No, I was I wanted to mention, earlier when we were talking about, Nick, I remember me and you, J-Cat, going up to Gage at the last CZW show and, telling him that
one
we were...
One of your rare appearances,
Yeah, good one. That we were going to have on Justice Payne. We told him and he's like, I'm talking about? Remember you were like...
Oh, yeah. He said, good luck with that. He's like, what do you have online? Because I don't even get online. Well, I don't fuck with him. I'm like, yeah, come on, man.
It takes me a while to get back to people. I'm not like a, as far as with the phone and text and all that shit. I mean, I do it, but it's just, I don't know. I'm pretty bad on returning calls and stuff like that. And
I know
that's probably what he's referring to and stuff. And I've been asked to do stuff in the past, and some stuff I never did or I never followed up on and stuff like that. So that's probably what he's referring to. So he's felt that too. In calling me and. Saying, 4 or 5 days later, saying, oh, I seen you call, what's up? I called you Monday, it's Sunday. Shit like that. And I'm like, oh, I thought I seen you call. Like, I don't even remember what I wanted to ask you, but, me returning calls and stuff like that, I've always been brutal, and I've always, had people sweating on decisions and stuff like that. It's nothing personal, it's just one of my things that drives people nuts as far as me returning calls and stuff like that. So.
Nah, I heard that.
I'm so glad we had him on have you on the show because, I know that...
It's not. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. I'm sorry it took so long and stuff like that, but...
Yeah, it was a rough guess.
It's cool. This shit is crazy and stuff, like, on my end and all that stuff. And, like I said, not being the greatest on getting back to people. And so.
It's all good, though.
No, I'm glad I finally did this. As boring as some parts, some of my stories are, I'm sure some people will get a kick out of some things.
They damn sure should. What was your match like with El Generico? I mean, that was one of your, after being, coming back and everything else, and I thought it was a great fucking match.
What was your match
like with El Generico?
That was a lot of fun. That match was a lot of fun, and I know the guys claim that I stiffed the shit out of them during that match and other things like that. And believe me, that is, you guys have seen El Generico bump and stuff like that. A lot of them ideas were his ideas in that match, and it just felt really good to have a match with him like that because, like I said, at that particular point, I wanted to start branching out as far as, that was a little bit after tagging with Gage, and I just really wanted to focus on being, getting back to just wrestling and being a wrestler and being a worker and working, in the ring. So having that match actually boosted my confidence a little bit, and I mean, he's one of those guys that is just, it's real easy to work with. He flows well in the ring. He's got good ideas, and the chemistry was awesome.
Yeah.
And some of the big bumps that he took, a lot of shit was his idea. Like we did like a pretty sick German suplex where we were on the top and I think I floated over him and gave him a big German. He like landed on his neck. Really, people think that he landed on his neck, but he caught the back of his shoulders and kind of flipped at the same time.
Yeah, he was good at that.
He wasn't that bad as far as when he came in the back, because I was saying, man, are you okay, or whatever. And as crazy as the pain thrower looked, as far as on the chairs, because I kind of let him go and just put him on the chairs, it wasn't that crazy. Like, I didn't throw him. He just kind of, like, landed on the chairs. As far as, I think they were like two of the biggest bumps that people actually said that I, you know, that I really took it to him with. But, you know, overall, the match was, I was very happy with the match, and it was...
Yeah, so it was great.
Wasn't there a belly-to-belly? Wasn't there a belly-to-belly on the outside or something?
It was a belly-to-belly, I did a belly-to-belly to him. Because
I was walking to the... I was walking over near there.
He whipped me into the rail, and I did a belly-to-belly, and he flew into the chairs, into the audience, into the crowd. That was... And another... He did that... I don't know if you guys remember that DDT that he did on the outside where he actually flew.
Oh, the dive through the ropes.
He dived through the ropes, and I caught him, and I mean that
fucking
just went off well. And he was, you know, he was little. He said, "I've always wanted to do this, but I don't know because guy, you know, my momentum and stuff like that." And I said, you know, because I got a lot of upper body strength. I told him, I said, if you get there, I said, don't worry about it. I'll catch you, and we'll, I'll do my part. It'll go off good. I said, I said it's going to be crazy, and you know, but as long as you get there, it'll go off. So he got here.
Tremendous.
You know, it went off. So it was like I said, the whole match was exciting, and I don't know if you remember the part where he gives me the Yakuza kick in his kick in the corner.
Yeah.
The chair. I don't know if you remember. He hit me once with the chair. No, it wasn't planned, and I said, and I whispered to him, see, that's, I get a lot of heat for beating people up, but I take a lot of shit. I whispered to him, I said, give me another one as hard as you can. he ran back, and he didn't hold anything back, and he flew, and he kicked me in the face, and that was pretty, it was a good match, man. It was back and forth, but you know, both of us, we took some shit in that match, and unfortunately, I always look like the bad guy. So it's, I like the match, man. I was a huge fan of the match, and
everybody else did too. Believe me.
Yeah, I was glad that it happened the night of Ring of Honor was there, because we did a lot of technical shit and you know, and back and forth stuff, and I think it was actually we had Ring of Honor fans. And it showed that we weren't just like, you know, Slash and hardcore stuff. And because you know the fans, they hear my name and they just associate me with CZW being a garbage guy. It was actually showed them that we do a little wrestling, and you know, so it was a good show. It was a good night.
Damn sure it was. Another thing I would like to ask you about was the whole incident, the match. With Necro Butcher.
Yeah.
And I know, a lot of people talk about it.
I'll give you the straight up here. He the first time I went for a pin throw on him, I said, it was all planned. I said, you know, at some point you do something, and I'll come over and I'll give you the pain thrower. Well, he sandbagged me with the pain thrower. He didn't lift up at all. I tried. Now, believe me, I've picked guys up and without even, you know what I mean, without even trying to be picked up, and he wasn't
picked up.
So I lifted. I mean, I'm not sitting here bragging and whatever, but, like, I can lift a lot of weight, and I try to pick him up, and he's not, you know, he's a tall dude, but he's not the world, you know, the heaviest guy. And I tried to pick him up with all my might, and I couldn't get him more than, you know, a foot off the ground.
Do you think he was fighting it?
And I talked, and I told him what was going on. Like, you know what I mean? I talked to him and said that we were going to go here, and I even talked to him right before it happened. So that happened. And then, so I went for it again. It's the same thing. And I just basically... was going right to the ropes, and I was just going to drop him on his feet. I had no intention on throwing him or anything like that. I just didn't know what to, you know what I mean? I didn't want to do it again. I had him up high enough to where, and I just made it to the ropes and was just going to let him drop down on his feet. Now, he was already pissed off because of before that, I believe right before that is when Nick threw the ladder in, and the ladder hit him in the back of the head. Do you remember that?
Didn't that happen
right before? I think that happened right before the whole thing. Nick threw a ladder in the ring and it smacked him in the back of the head.
Right.
And so he was pissed off about getting hit in the head with the ladder. And then that happened, and he thought that I was, you know, obviously he thought that I was trying to hurt him and stuff like that. And I had no, I just turned around, and he was, like, right there, and he just started swinging for fences. And he was kicking and stuff, and I was in the corner, and I was selling it, which I didn't, like, honestly, I didn't realize because I know the way he is, and I didn't know he was
doing it.
And I was down. Believe me, when I was down and he started kicking, there was no, you know what I mean? I just started covering up, and I got pissed off, and I'm like, this mother, and then John grabbed him, and I whispered to him, he said, during the match, after the incident, he whispered, he said, no, we're all cool. I said, we're not all cool. I'll talk to you after the match, like that.
Right.
So we got in the back, and you know, I went up. I said, "What the fuck?" And he goes, "You tried to, you know, what happened?" I said, "Dude, it wasn't even like that." I said, "You sandbagged me a couple times." I said, "Just, you know what I mean? I didn't know what to do." I said, "It's many crazy, fucking, sick things that guys have done to you and stuff like that." I said, "I wasn't trying to hurt you or anything. I was just trying to get rid of you because you weren't. I didn't know what to do." I said, I don't know if you were trying to hurt me, but if it's okay, it's all good. I said, not all good. Can't help me in my head. I said, you have a problem. I said, don't do it out there. I said, come to me after the match, and if you've got a problem. I said, and then everybody was, like, around us. Like, no, it's cool. And he's like, hey, man, it's fine. You know, I'm sorry. And I'm like, dude, it's not. I said, you fucking stop there. I said, you give me. I turn around. You're right there. I said, it's fucked up. I took into consideration that, yeah, it was probably wasn't the smartest thing for me to do, but on my behalf, I wasn't trying physically. I didn't say, oh, this dude's sandbagging me, let me end his life or break his neck, you know what I mean? I just didn't know.
Right.
I went towards the ropes and just, it was a quick reaction, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, and then we squashed it that night. I said, well, I'm sorry if you thought that way, and he's like, I'm sorry I reacted like that. I got scared. I was pissed off. I said, dude, it's cool. I said, but
of course.
You know. I mean, we squatted after that night, and guys asked him, you know, after the fact, and he just said, hey, you know, I was ready to kill him, you know. I felt like he tried to kill me, so I wanted to go back in the ring. I didn't jump on him. I mean, I would have had enough of stomp, you know, with him stomping me, and I just would have got out of character and just started, you know, we would have just started fighting. I mean, there's only so much I could take as far as selling, trying.
Oh, how well that would have went, but he laid into me
a couple. I mean, I blocked a lot of shit, but he got a couple shots.
Sure
in
did.
Me and to where I was getting pissed off, and John grabbed him, and I was getting ready to leave, and I just kept going with it and stuff like that. So,
That turned out well in the locker room, and that's great because, you know, I don't want to see anybody, you know, get into, you know, bad terms. And obviously, you know, a lot of fans see that. And from what I seen, it was like you dumped him on his fucking head outside of the ring, and he came the fuck back in. He stomped the shit out of you and hit you.
I mean, I understand. I understand. I completely understand about what he thought and all, you know. And it was just a situation where I reacted. It was just a react. So I didn't,
but yeah, however,
but I
have you?
Go ahead. Go ahead. We're gonna say.
Have you had any bad, completely bad interactions with a guy in the ring? Where this guy just, I can't work with this guy, or he's not up to my caliber, or you know, any of that thing?
Yeah, there's. I don't want to really. You know, as far as that, they're not on my, they weren't on my level. There's been guys I worked with in the past, you know, and just, it was kind of, you know, just a, I don't know. I mean, no names really come to mind. I remember the night that Gage worked, we worked Too Tough Tony that night.
It was like Too Tough Tony and Pondo, right?
Yeah, and it was just a bad, bad, like, Pondo, you know, I've worked Pondo in Japan, and I know what he does, and he knows what I do, and we know what to do when we're working each other, but that night we worked
Tony,
right. It was just bad. He was holding all these spots, and me and my brother, like, it's not going to go off. You know, he was coming up with all these ideas, and like, it's not going to work, and he was determined on, and we said, it's going to be too slow for this crowd, they're not going to, you know, appreciate it, they're not going to. And he was pretty determined. I said, dude, you know what? I'm not going to argue. You do what you want to do, then, you know, and we'll see what works. And that was just a bad. I remember doing a few spots with him that match. And that was just, that was one of the standouts. It was just like, God, I hope I never work him again. And I mean, he's a great dude, you know, overall. And he is what he is, you know. And it wasn't a glass match, it wasn't a hardcore match, but it was just. And, you know, as far as, there's never really been, other than, like, working with CM Punk, you know, saying that, I honestly said, I hope I never have to work with him again, or if we do, hopefully, you know, we talk. And
you're not working with anybody, you're retired.
No, right, but I'm saying, I don't really have no ill will or anything with.
What was your last match? Because I don't even know, because it wasn't, you didn't get your due as this is my last match type shit.
My last match was Gangrel.
Crazy you got
thing. I think it was, because I'm trying to think, because I wrestled Trent. I would love to say that it was Trent, but it was either Trent or Gangrel because my last actually in the ring I reffed in PWU it was Nate Hatred and Johnny and Trent versus me and V-Bar. I guest reffed that match last year. But my actual match, I believe my last match was against Gangrel.
Wow.
PWU, so. Yeah, in Feasterville.
That's crazy. I honestly wish you would have got a better send-off in CZW, because that's where you made
it. Actually, the last, I don't know if you guys remember, the last match I wrestled was Ruckus, I believe, right? When I dropped the strap to Ruckus was my last match in CZW. And goodbye. No, I mean, I already talked to John and said I was leaving anyway, but I don't know if it got out that I was leaving, but it was pretty weird that night, like, that everybody was doing that. And I mean, I know there's a lot of new fans that are familiar with the old stuff, but, and even there are some fans that are familiar with the old stuff who just never had a good opinion about me, and that's cool and it's fine, but hopefully people realize that my heart and, like, back in the old days of CZW when we first started, we'd had grand shows on Saturday nights. I would go at 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays and go and set up all the chairs and set up everything and go and sit on Friday nights at the warehouse before shows and just sit in the middle of the ring with the lights low and just imagine what it could be here and vision for it and stuff like that and just all I wanted was just CZW to succeed and just be, you know, what it could be and what I thought it could be. And, you know, I just, my passion was CZW. So anywhere further in my career, it was just, I thought of that a lot of times when people were billing me and people giving me shit and all, and just like, man, people just don't know the real story of, you know.
I hear you, go ahead.
Just the real story of me, like, you know, with the booking, how much behind the scenes stuff that Ash really did, and it basically John just go up and going to Japan, and just me trying to hold shows together, you know, booking all the shows, and him just when it was convenient for him when he was around, he wanted to run everything, but it was time for him to go to Japan and make a bunch of money and do this and that, saying here, the show's yours, you know, and me make it work, so. But
yeah.
I wanted I love the idea, and I ran programs to where I had shit set up for months, and you know, I love being the booker and stuff like that. It was just a shame because when John came back, he'd say, well, I don't like that idea. Here's what we're going to do. And he really didn't have, like, a tremendous background as far as with, you know, with like, putting matches together or what fans around Philadelphia area like, because it was just, he grew up like a big WWF fan and all, you know, all that shit.
Right.
And I mean, I used to watch shows, and I would stare at Paul Heyman and shit that he did and ideas, and I just, the atmosphere around the actual wrestling is what people enjoy and stuff like that. Not so much just what's going on in the ring, but the whole atmosphere, and that's what I tried to create, you know.
Right. To me, you know, like I felt, you know, as a fan, as a huge supporter of you, you know, I didn't see none of this shit coming. So when I went to shows after show after show after show, you wrestled one match, and it may have been your last match in CZW. I would like to say it was. And, yeah, the fans are treating you like shit, like you never did anything. And me, you know, as one man, I was supporting you, me and my girl and shit. You know, we showed up since 2001.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, believe me, like, don't get it twisted or think. I mean, I watched all of the videos and all the DVDs, and I mean, I've always seen, ever since the beginning, I've always seen you guys sitting out there and always knew you guys and stuff like that. So,
thank you.
I mean, I just...
Thank you.
You know,
I got a cat named Justice, and that's my best friend.
Guys,
you know what I mean?
A lot of guys think I got a big chip on my shoulder, ego and stuff like that, but I know who was there, and I know, you know, who made it possible for us to do what we did and all that stuff. So, I mean,
of course,
you know,
but
for my time that I had there.
But my feeling was, is, you know, the match ended, and it may be the match you said, run after this or that. I don't even remember the match, but as you were walking out, you said, oh,
right.
Yeah, as people were booing you, you said, oh, after all I've done for you, thanks a lot, guys, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
and you walked away, and, like, just my heart dropped, and I said, don't tell me, really? Like, this is, really? This is it?
Yeah,
fuck, man.
I believe it or not, I mean, a lot of shit, I mean, I had, honestly, when I left for XPW, the first time I left, I actually got 2 death threats from people, and people telling me that go to XPW, don't worry about it. We know what you drive, and your car is going to be in flames, and your tires are going to be slashed, and you know, F your cunt girlfriend, and we know what she is, and we know who she is.
That's
crazy. I mean, it was pretty crazy, and, like, you know, and all the shit that people said to me over the years about, you know, like, the me being, like, a big juice head, and me being, you know, this and that, and not bumping, and me being a dick, and everybody hating me or whatever, you know, it just brushed off my shoulder. I laughed, but it just, you know, a lot of the guys who came later on, you know, fans that really didn't know, and like I said, even in fans that took, you know, shit for granted and stuff like that, it was just... Sometimes it really got to me, you know, as far as, like, wow, I feel like that, you know, people don't even remember, like, the Mick Mondo and me moments and the shit that, you know, all the cage of death shit that I did and all, you know what I mean? And
that's something.
You know, I wasn't making no money. It's not like I was doing this for, you know what I mean? I'm doing it for the fans. I'm doing it for a pop. It's not, you know. And it's
right.
Just, you know, I was the flagship of the company. I mean, I was doing the main events. You know what I mean? I was the one drawing the people. I'm not saying that, you know, they didn't come to see other people, but I was the main event every month. You know what I mean? I was they come to see, and most of the time I deliver, not all the time, but just to be basically like a mid carder who would come from there for every once in a while. When
Mid Carter, you were top golfer, man.
I'm saying the way the people were treating me is basically like, you're some, you know, indie guy who comes here whenever you want and this and that. And I'm like, man, you don't remember everything that I did and all the shit, sacrifices that I made for this fucking, for this shit to work and all that.
I understand
so,
that,
yeah,
man.
Some shit got to me, you know what I mean? So, but,
yeah, I went into this shit last week with Sabian,
some shit that he was talking about, and I brought up that, yeah, this dude went off the top of the fucking cage. This dude got brutalized by fucking Nate Hatred and got thrown here and fucking power bombed on his fucking head and everything else. And then a few years later, everybody forgets about the bumps, and they're like, oh, you're only doing basic wrestling now. You ain't worth shit to us. And I think that's disrespectful. I don't understand that, where you don't take the guy's, the whole repertoire into factor when you analyze this guy's work. I don't think that's good.
Honestly, the biggest, you know, I've always, well, now I've come to realize that every time, the whole mindset of you don't know what it's going is because it's true with me with wrestling, because I don't care what anyone says, when I came back from Best of the Best, there was 1,200 fucking whatever was in there. It was packed house that night. Everybody was on their fucking feet saying, welcome back. Now, I know people are going to say that they weren't, and they weren't, but
definitely one of them.
That whole place popped. And
hell yeah.
They were there, they were watching, they said everybody stood on their feet popped when I came out. And same thing when I came back from, you know, when I came out of nowhere with, you know, the same people that tell me, nah, goodbye, you suck, whatever. I came surprised at Trench Joe, and I got a huge pop when I came out. You know what I mean? It's just, it's just people get spoiled, and people don't realize, and they just forget, and you're only as good as your last match, you know what I mean? So, it's a shame, but you know, for guys like you and stuff like that, I get emails and you know, people shoot me shit every once in a while just saying, you know, I appreciate stuff that you did in the past and all that stuff. So, hey, you know, you can't please everybody, so.
Of course, man. Look at your own repertoire and know what it is. But do you watch any of, you know, the current shit and see any of this?
I can't say I watch, like, every, you know, religiously or anything.
Right.
It's hard to get into because of they just try to push anybody down their throat to be a star, and it's just, go ahead.
Do you see any of the guys that you do, you know, happen to catch that you think that these are the guys? These are the guys that might make it. These are the guys that you should push, whether they are or not. What are the guys that you see that you think are the next wave?
As far as what, on any level, or are you talking about in, like...
CZW.
I don't know. I mean, there's the guys and stuff like that, but I don't know. It's hard. There's not...
Or unless you don't fuck with them.
Nah, I mean, I don't really know too many of the guys. I mean, the newer guys and stuff like that, but...
Okay.
I mean, there's great workers. I just think there's too much going on now. The psychology is completely out the window.
Do you watch wrestling still, or?
Yeah, I mean, I just shit on TV every once in a while. I'll watch.
Like
the
WWE and shit like that. Who do you think of the top guys there?
I mean, I like Orton. I mean, I think he's a tremendous worker. I think he's
Randy Orton's badass.
I think he's got it to be a superstar, you know, and I mean, I think he deserves a spot right now because he, you know, promo-wise, character-wise, and he actually can work, you know what I mean? It's not just, you know, he's not just getting by. He actually has the psychology, and he can work. So,
right.
And a lot of younger guys and stuff like that, you know, the whole Nexus thing and all, I mean, they're just trying to, you know, just trying to build stories and stuff like that. I don't really see too many of them guys.
It's
a bunch of big guys. You know what I mean? It's hard to see guys who's like Orton and guys who paid their dues, you know, around so long and just, you know what I mean, throw these guys in the mix like right away, main event, and then being in the pieces. It's just, you know, I just think guys back then like Michaels and all that who wouldn't stand for this shit. You know what I mean? Like, how are you going to get to my face when you've been in the business 8 months? You know what I mean?
Of course. You know, speaking of the guys that are coming up and everything, and the minute you said Nexus, the first name that
popped in my head was Loki, that happened to Cavall, whatever the fuck. Back in the day in 99 when he was throwing chairs at Shorty and shit. What's your stories about that? Because I know you were in the locker room.
Yeah, I was pretty pissed off, man. I went up to him. But I knew him from Jersey All-Pro and stuff like that. I knew him.
Right.
I met him prior before that incident. But he's a hothead. I mean, he's always been a hothead. He's calmed down. He, back in the day, you know, back then, going back then, you know, he was the king in Jersey All-Pro, and Fat Frank kissed his ass, and it was whatever to keep him happy. And he was just a little angry guy, you know what I mean? Like, he thought he was the best, and, you know, if you tried to tell him, hey, look, dude, you're 5'6" and you're 160 pounds, relax, you know what I mean? But he just had the ego and mindset of that he was, you know, untouchable and stuff like that. I mean, it was tremendous talent and stuff, and the shit that he could do was crazy, but he had such a chip on his shoulder, you know what I mean? And just this, he was like that, you know what I mean? Real quiet and just real, but when he freaked out and stuff like that.
When we're talking 99, I mean, you know, back in the time that you came to fucking Jersey All-Pro, you ain't act like that.
No, I was never like that. It's just, you know what I mean? I was never like that. The only thing I got accused of at times is being too quiet, you know what I mean? Say, oh, what's his problem? Why is he being? And it wasn't anything. That it's just, I got accused of being antisociable at times, and then when I was sociable, if I was busting balls, people took it personal because I wasn't always busting balls, so if I'm doing it, it's like, wow, why is he have such a problem with me? You know what I mean? It wasn't like I wasn't known to be a ball buster, but when I was ball busting, it was just some guys took it personal, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I heard a lot of shit as a fan as you being a huge politician. You know what I mean? Like he was running for president in that locker room, but otherwise I never heard anything.
I hear you. See, guys didn't really know until they got into what I was. They basically said, oh, well, he's gonna be champion. And he just went to win all the matches, and it wasn't true. I was like booking everything.
Yeah, if you was booking, of course you were politicking.
I said, listen, if you guys have somebody better that would be world champion and can guarantee that they're going to be here every single month, you know what I mean, and it's going to be, you know, whatever, I said, then they're less put. But other than that, you know, it's like I told you way earlier in the conversation, somebody that's well-rounded that can go in the ring with a Jay Briscoe in September and then work Whitebeater in October, and then, you know what I mean, go in the ring with Tajiri in November and then work Nate Hatred in December, you know what I mean? Like, guys that could actually, because, like, we built up Adam Flash to be, you know, he actually, believe it or not, mid-card.
Honestly, I think that, that match you worked in Sewell with Adam Flash was the fucking best match of his career, in my opinion. I think he had an unbelievable match with you, and what was that, like higher level of pain, or...
Yeah, I think that's...
Some shit like that.
Like, that was the thing. I said, just do a winner, it gets a title shot. And, you know, I forget who he worked, and that was my... I said, because we had trouble of... you know, coming up with ideas until, you know, main events and stuff. I said, well, just do a winner gets a shot at the title, you know, something like that. And he worked somebody, and everybody, he won, and people are like, oh, my God, Payne's going to kill you, it's going to, you know what I mean? And I not actually got Flash over, I believe, that match as far as with main event status and stuff, and we worked well together. The match I liked that match, and, you know, like from that point on, he was actually considered more of a main eventer, and it was believable, you know, that he would actually, you know, get a title shot, not just being a, you know, a goofy Rocky or a mid-carder, you know, and it was actually believable. And then he started doing like harder matches, you know, we worked against, you know, when we got at the arena and he's working Messiah as like a higher, you know, a higher up in the card, and he won the Iron Man title and stuff like that. He just, I think it boosted his career as far as facing me, you know, at that time, and it worked. You know what I mean? I get compliments on that match, and you know, I was a fan of that match.
Yeah, it was definitely a good match. Like I said, my favorite matches ever were definitely you and your brother. This time it's personal, I think it was called. And that match is fucking ridiculous. You know, your brother ended up handcuffed and fucking hit with a chair. I forget what the dude's name is. Steve something?
Steve Rise or whatever his name was. Whatever. That guy from Canada. I met him. I did a show for IWS in Canada.
Right.
And he was up there. I said, there's like a thing right now where I'm like, I don't have no friends and everything. It'd be cool. Like, you know, I thought I'd like have a bigger, you know, bigger dude. And, like, he knew who the fuck is this guy. I'd be here, whatever, you know, that whole lot. And, you know, I said, that's how it is. Like big card, you know what I mean? And they ain't gonna book you because they ain't gonna fly you in from Canada. They don't even know who you are. And I'll drive. Guys, you crashed my house. I said, like I said, they ain't gonna book you in a hotel. You know what I mean? And they were like, just the experience. They didn't even get paid. They said, just the experience of being, you know, cause at the time we were.
Didn't even get paid?
Huh? They
didn't even get paid.
They drove all the way to Canada, all the way from Canada, and crashed.
Was that Steve? What was his name? Steve
Rides? Steve Rides or Steve Royds or whatever.
Rides. It sounded like Rides when I seen it on paper.
But he they crashed at my house, and so we went, you know, my brother was living with me at the time. We went over shit, and that was Nick's idea with the can cough and all that shit. And I said, I pulled him aside, you know, I even said, look, Nick, I don't know much about this dude, him swinging a chair, and, you know, I don't know what's, you know, I don't know if you trust him with a chair or whatever. He's like, we'll just talk to him and tell him how to do it. I said, all right. And so that was Nick's idea with the whole chair and the, you know, with the crucified and the handcuffs and all that stuff. And I think the idea came off Cactus Jack or Mick Foley back in, you know, when he got handcuffed and all. I think he played off that.
Oh, yeah.
Nick would do something like that. Nick would think of that kind of idea.
Yeah, exactly.
It was definitely back in the day, Rock fucking Mega.
And he said, don't stop. another fucking crazy thing to hear, but he said, don't stop swinging chairs until I drop. So he said, I'll bounce back and forth off you like a pinball machine. He said, just go back and forth until I drop.
I was just watching that the other day.
I don't know if he had a number in his head or if he just he got a concussion or I have no idea. Go ahead.
Speaking of head trauma, you know, what's your views on JC Bailey?
It's hard to tell, man, because they tried to. I guess they didn't. They when the whole thing with Benoit went crazy, they tried to associate it with head trauma, and I guess the Christopher Nowinski was trying to get his brain donated so they could scan his brain and see if the head trauma makes, you know, people go nuts and stuff like that. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, as far as with that. I mean, I think people have problems later on in life with head trauma and stuff, but I don't know if you can associate with people going nuts as far as with, you know, just doing crazy, outlandish things or you know, or harm to themselves. I don't know. You know, I'm no expert. I don't know. I just know that, you know, I always associate with, you know, with head trauma and stuff like that, or concussions, that maybe you'll have problems later on in life remembering shit and constant headaches and stuff like that. But I mean,
right.
Who knows? It could, you know, it could be. I mean, it could be reasons that people snap or people, you know, do outlandish stuff is because of head trauma.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like the idea of, I mean, I know people don't want to hear this, but I like the idea of of WWE now protecting guys and stuff like that as far as, you know, they don't do the headshots no more and stuff like that. And, I mean,
but,
I just,
you know, as a wrestler, I got to hear your opinion on the fact that a lot of people say that, like, a bump is equivalent to a mild car crash. So,
right.
Now a headshot with a chair, what difference does that make? If you take enough bumps, regular-ass bumps, does that change anything?
I don't think a bump is equivalent. Are you basing it on that show they did that time or no? Didn't they do a show?
Well, I'm just saying, like, a lot of people, like, on the studies that they've done, they've said that a bump, you know, a regular ring bump is equivalent to a mild car crash.
But to your body, though, right? You know what I mean? Like, you're talking about, like, a bump, like, on the head, or are you talking about, like, you doing a bump the result of a car crash to your body and a bump to your body? Or are you talking about actually, like, a head?
I mean, I don't know. From what the studies have heard, I don't even know where I got it from, but
they
said that, like, a 30-mile-an-hour car crash is equivalent to a regular ring bump.
Right. But they could also mean your body. You know what I mean? Like, you could beat up your body for years and years as far as with sports and stuff like that. But if you protected your skull, I mean, your body could be totally fucked and you could be bent over and have a lot of, like, aches and pains in your body, but your head be intact. You know what I mean? And you could feel like you've been through a ton of car crashes. But, I mean, if they're associating that with taking a lot of head bumps, you know what I mean, like landing on your head or doing whatever, then, yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. But they could, you know what I mean, they could mean it either way as far as doing all that damage to your body. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, you could go, you know, you get a certain amount of concussions. Who knows? I mean, it could, you know, as far as, I always thought memory lasts, but it could associate to those crazy things. So.
Yeah. Maybe
that's why my brother has such a I don't give a fuck mentality anymore because, you know, he's had so many concussions that it's just, you know what I mean, he doesn't care, so.
Yeah. If you replace chair shots with pile drivers, do you think it would make a difference?
I don't think. Pile driver is not really I've never really been hurt on a pile driver, and I've gotten pile drivers through.
But this is shock. This is shock involved, you know?
Yeah,
just the shock involved.
It is, but if you, I would rather take a pile driver of a chair shot any day because
of course.
In a pile driver, you're tucking your head in and your chin in, your shoulders are landing on somebody's thighs, and the ring is giving you somewhat of a bounce, and they're landing on their ass. You know what I mean? It's really not unless you did the day with Owen Hart when you know with the Steve Austin with
Even like a stiff snap power bomb or some shit, you know?
I think all that, it depends on what kind of chair shot you thought. You know what I mean? Like, there's chair shots to where guys just, you know what I mean, they swing the chair, then they let go. Or, I mean, you're talking a full-fledged, just as hard as I can, shot to the head. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, every once in a while that's fine, but I think that's back in the day, it was like guys were saying, oh, my God, he's got a chair, and usually it was the end of something. You know what I mean? But now guys are just first 2 minutes of the match, you're going to grab a chair and do five spots with a chair and get hit in the head. And don't worry, we still got 21 minutes to go, and we'll pop that.
Right.
Back in the day, it was you grab a chair, that was, oh, my God, you know what I mean? That was something big. And if somebody got hit in the head with a chair, it was like, wow. Are they even going to come back for a month? You know what I mean? They got a chair shot to the head.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know what I mean? It's just like everything else. You know, it just became no big deal on par
definitely.
Or whatever. So if you just, if it's
like
no
I was
deal,
saying,
you know,
there's
so many chair shots to the head. It's just, you know, it's
my boy Sabian, he, you know, he just cut that interview for us last week, but he said, you know, some shit about, you know, I mean, in 2004, he was catching so many concussions from Nate Hatred, it was ridiculous. But everything was cooking, and the matches went off great. I mean, he was taking power bombs. You seen his head snap back. It was over.
Yeah. Nate was pretty known as far as like giving guys concussions, as far as with you know guys slapping the back of their head and stuff like that.
You're
because he did. He, you know, with a power, there's ways to power bomb and make it look. you know, pretty good. But, I mean, he was just throwing guys down and was just, you know, I remember a lot of guys were complaining about that and stuff like that. And my brother was known to give guys a few concussions and problems, you know, cutting guys, you know, hard way as far as with chair shots and stuff.
Sure,
like that.
Yeah.
You know, Nick and me, both of them. But I don't know, man. I just gotta say, I'm just at a point in my life where it's better to see guys getting protected. You know what I mean? As far
yeah,
as,
of course.
Most indie wrestlers don't have insurance and don't have, and it's just their heart and determination just outweighs sometimes their ability.
It's been real through time. It's the same thing, man.
But
is there anything in your career you wish you would have accomplished? Now, I know, you know, your career is pretty much over, and I respect the shit out of it because you're a family man, and, you know, and anybody in America should respect that because, you know, you're still built like a beast. You're still fucking taking care of your own, and that's
right.
The only thing that fucking matters, you know, and entertainment is great, but when it comes down to it, it's, you know, it's your own shit. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. And, but in retrospect, you know, is there anything in your career you wish you would have accomplished?
Maybe just to have been on the road, like as far as maybe like a year with like WWE and just, you know, maybe just seeing what it was like to just to be on the road and travel. But I know the way I am, and I'm like a homesick person. You know what I mean? Even though
right.
at times I didn't have people at home waiting on me, it's just I was always comfortable with my atmosphere, you know, that I created for myself. And as many times we went to Japan and stuff like that, I mean, it was great, and I loved being over there and with the guys and all that stuff. But I would always get the itch, you know, towards like end of tours, and I can't wait to get home and shit like that and all. So I mean, I can't say,
right.
You know, I mean, I would have loved to have maybe like for a year just steady traveled and been on, you know, been on the road and just, you know, just to see different places and just to work or whatever. But I know the way, you know, I just know the way I am and stuff like that. It would have got old to me real fast. So, I guess maybe that, and maybe not making as many friends in the business, but at that time, it's kind of hard to make friends. People, I mean, there's some guys that are truly, you know, close and friends and stuff like that. But it's hard to feel out, you know, in that business. It's hard to feel out who's really true and who's really, because everybody comes with a smile on their face in the business. You know what I mean? Everybody wants to be friends, and they pretend. And it's a lot of fake shit that goes on. And I just never been that type of person. I've always been like a straight shooter, and I've always been like, you know, this is me, take it or leave it. But you know what I mean? When you meet me, you know what you get. You know, there's no, like, fake smile on my face. There's no, you know what I mean? So, as far I guess that would be the only thing as far as with wrestling and stuff, is just maybe not, you know, not experiencing all that I could have as far as with travel and, you know, seeing different places and stuff like that. I mean, I was very thankful for going to a few different countries and wrestling,
right.
And you know what I mean, doing some traveling and stuff like that. But just maybe, you know, meeting more people and stuff like that, and getting the opportunity to other places. So, I mean, I guess that would actually be, you know, of course I would have liked to have worked some more, you know, named people, you know, name recognition, you know, people,
of course,
the business and stuff that, you know.
In the indies, were there any guys that stand out that you would have liked to work?
What's that? I'm sorry.
I said in the indies, are there any guys that stand out that you would have liked to work?
At my time, when I was around,
yeah.
I mean,
or right now, that you would say, hey, man, I wish I was still around to work that guy.
Yeah, I mean, going back to my, like, it's probably better if I go back to my, like, I would like to work AJ Styles. I mean, he was, you know, at that time.
Right.
He was real, you know, all like the guy, you know, like Danielson's real good. I mean, I like to work Danielson and Christopher Daniels, the guys like that. I would have liked to have worked.
What do you think about Sami Callihan?
He's good. He's very good. You know, another guy that who don't get the, you know, recognition. I mean, I'm, you know, the diehards know and all, but Roderick Strong. I've always been a big fan of his work and stuff like that, and with all his suplexes and stuff like that, we were always close because
you worked him in Jersey All Pro, didn't you? Didn't you work him in Jersey All Pro?
Roderick Strong, did I work him?
I thought you did.
Did I really?
Jersey All Pro.
Did I really?
Okay. I thought you worked him in Jersey All Pro. I was there, but maybe not.
Maybe I did. Maybe, I don't know.
I ain't you,
I think he did. I think you. I think I remember seeing that.
You know what? Now you're saying that, I'm remembering like he wore longer tights. He had like reddish maroon tights on or something. Now you're saying that.
I don't know about the tights,
I'm saying about the tights is because I seriously I'm trying to think of back in the ring working with guys and stuff.
Right.
Like that. No, because I'm thinking of his look now. He wears he's actually got the wrestling little tiny tights on and the black boots and all running around like he's in, a built dude and stuff like that. But he was like a kid. So maybe I did. Maybe
I know you debuted that.
Now the way he is, the way he works and shit and Ring of Honor and stuff like that. And he's
really I know you definitely, you debuted that fucking Stalling German in Jersey All Pro, and I was a huge fan of that. And I was sad that, your career wasn't, long-lasting after that because you actually did start to create and, innovate a lot of different things after that. And
right.
I was like, oh, shit. And I think the Roderick match was one of those, but,
Yeah. I don't know. I might have worked them, dude. Honestly, maybe a few, one too many chair shots. No, you're saying that shit about chair shots. I don't even remember guys at work.
Blame your brother. How about him?
What's that?
I said, blame your brother. How about him?
Yeah, that's true. He's probably the hardest one to ever hit me with a chair. No, actually, now that you're saying that, dude, I think I stick with Robbie Strong. Whatever. But, I don't know. He's a fan. I'm a fan.
Of him. Yeah, man. Eric, you got any other questions? Eric.
I'm trying to think of, some questions.
Fresh up.
I can't think of anything else,
If you can't, it's all good. But, hey, Justice, man, I thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
For coming on here. This has been the most elusive and hard to get fucking interview than I've ever got.
But it was worth it. It was worth the wait.
Yeah, of course. But I've had to coerce Eric to keep giving you chances and shit like that. But in the same token, you're the only cat that's got a fucking my cat in the house. Has a name of. I got a cat in my house named Justice.
I know.
Because of you.
He's a real red guy, and I popped huge for it before. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. But that's honestly, the shit that I was going at. I have a cat named Senshi, too, but I don't expect that to happen. But that's fine. That's a whole other thing. It's a whole other thing. It's not even something I'm going at. Justice came before any of that, and that's my best friend in the house. So, much respect for you coming on this fucking show, and
you
gave us a phenomenal.
I just hope people learn some shit, and take what I said, and just realize that my heart was into this shit.
Of course it was.
And towards the end wasn't as great, but it's all good, man. I'm thankful and happy of what I still my thoughts and my memories of back then.
Overall,
your legacy. Nobody can ever fucking you put in a 1,000,000,000% of your fucking your efforts and shit like that. You busted your fucking ass every fucking night.
1,000,000,000%. My whole thing on the Yakuza Kick, my whole fucking vision and my whole reason for this is a lot of people tribute people when they're dead, and they give them sick fucking respect, and they give them all sorts of fucking accolades when they die.
my whole shit is giving the motherfuckers props before they die. Because a lot of guys respect that shit, and they deserve that shit. They don't get it until they're gone, and that's ridiculous. So
hear,
my whole shit.
You want? Well, I don't mean to cut it off. You want? A thought came to my head.
Not a problem.
I said when I went to Trent's tribute, and you know, after everybody was in and stuff like that, the crowd was in and all. Me and Messiah were looking out at the crowd and everything, and we're like, man, this is awesome and all. So many people showed up and all, and I looked over at him and I started laughing. He goes, "What?" I go, "Dude, if I was dead and this was my memorial show, we wouldn't even be able to sell out the front row." I said, "No." And he started laughing.
You're crazy.
I was like, "Nah, come on." I go,
crazy.
"Dude." I said, "We wouldn't even be able to
dead wrong."
I said, "Half the front row would be filled." I said, "That just shows
dead
you,
wrong.
You know, how much Trent touched, you know, how many people Trent touched and all and stuff like that." But,
yeah.
I know what you're saying, though, as far as, you know, people don't get the recognition until they die and something happens. And it's a shame because, you know, guys make mistakes in their lives and stuff like that. And maybe if people showed, you know, a little bit more of how much they meant to people and stuff, and maybe, you know, be able to turn people around and stuff. But, yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Well, like I said, man, normally I bring people on here and I'm like, who would you like to work next? What's your goals? What's your this? What's your that? But, you know, for somebody who's a CZW legend, for somebody who fucking one of the cornerstones of being the building blocks to make CZW even exist right now, we got on right now is Justice Payne. And, you took the greener pastures to take care of your family and take the, you know, and of course, that's a better move. There's nothing more important than your personal life and your family and everything else. So, anybody shitting on that, come at me, man. And
yeah, I mean,
that's
honestly,
bullshit.
Honestly, I've, every choice that I've made as far as what wrestling has always been reflected, or not just me making a judgment call on what I should do. It's always been why I should do it because of this reason, and it usually had to do with my family and what I should do. You know, as far as with me getting hurt, if I should stop wrestling because of me getting hurt, or if I should maybe do this show because, you know, maybe I can make a little bit more for my family and stuff like that, because, you know, times are tight and stuff like that. That's usually what it based my decision on, was what was best for my family. And I think John kind of understood that. Got me back when we I said, you know, it's nothing personal. It was nothing, hey, let me boost my career. Let me go do this because I need to feed my ego. I said, John, I wanted that house. I wanted a house. I said, it was the only way I could get a house. I said, I knew your company would go, and I knew it wouldn't kill, you know, anything, and nobody would get hurt, and it was just, you know what I mean? You know, people's, you know, feelings would get hurt, but guess what? Life goes on, and you know, at the end of the day, I think I suffered the most as far as because I wasn't the same in people's eyes after I left, so. You know,
what's your shoot job now for people that do wonder?
I'm a union iron worker in the Philadelphia local, and I've been
iron worker. So we're working with Heights again, right? Pyramid of Hell type Heights.
Yeah, do you know the big Comcast building over in Philly, the little big glass one, the biggest building in? You know, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, man.
Our company did that. I was all the way on top of the open iron. 62 floors in the air, dead of winter.
That's a bad motherfucker right there.
So,
don't jump off that shit with no thumbtacks.
Yeah, no, no jumping. Man.
No thumbtacks with his elbow drop.
Yeah, believe me, I hear all that shit all the time. You guys know that, you know,
right.
That's all
I'm
shitting
on. How we ended
that. Yeah, so.
But
hey, yeah,
man.
That's what I do. So, I, you know, as far as that should be done,
hey.
Too. So, it's, you know, I believe
it. Yeah, that's great. You know, I wish you the best in the future, Justice Payne, man. You know, thank you so much for finally coming on after such an elusive battle to get you on this motherfucker right now. I never believed it was going to happen. But thank you so much for coming on.
Nah, I appreciate it. Thanks for dealing with me as long as you did.
Yeah, I dealt with you.
You broke my heart a few nights. It's all good.
Sure.
It's all.
I'm sure you motherfucked me a few times, but that's all good, man. It's fine.
Yeah, I said a lot of shit about you in the past, but it's all good. I bet you said, you know what,
everybody else, you know what, I think like everybody else now. It's true. He is a dick.
Your Phillies still lost.
Here we go.
The Eagles ain't winning the Super Bowl. So I'm just saying, you know. It's all good. You're my dude, man.
Next time you see Jay, give him a pain thriller off, on the floor, and you have my permission.
It sounds like Eric wants to throw you under the bus so bad right now, like everything that you said about me.
He's a 49ers fan.
Nah,
you're a 49ers fan.
I'm a 49ers fan. I have two wins. Thanks.
Who?
Thanks for coming out. it's all good.
Real close friends, he's a Niners fan too, so it's all good.
Yeah, man. Hey, yo, again, thanks for coming on. Did a phenomenal interview for us, and I respect the shit out of your career, as well as many others should. And, for Eric Williams and everything else, man, yo, thank you so much. I'll talk to you later, man.
If you guys ever want to do, like, part two of this interview and there's anything else you want to cover, I mean, it's fair to give me, like, a 9-month window and, we'll get it done. Right?
Yeah, 9 months. I think that's about fair. We will try for like 6 to 9 months to get you, and I think we probably might.
You got to be like the cable company, man. You got to give me a little bit of a window here. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. It's like a layover. It's like a layaway. We'll put you on layaway for fucking 6 months from now, and then maybe we'll get you. Much respect, man. Justice Payne, that motherfucker, one of the icons of fucking indie business, fucking CCW legend, period. Good luck of putting up with his motherfucking resume. And thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. We'll check you later, homie.
All right, peace, man. Be safe.
All right.
Thank you.